live from around the world, it's time for Peter Greenberg Worldwide with America's number one frontline travel news journalist. Get on the phone now and call 1-888-887-3837. That's 1-888-88-PETER. And now, the man who travels over 400,000 miles each year, the travel detective, Peter Greenberg.
And welcome aboard another edition of Peter Greenberg Worldwide. Hope you're having a wonderful weekend wherever you happen to be. Of course, we've been living on airplanes left and right, up and down, and all around. We're taking your calls at 888-887-3837. That's 888-88-PETER. And if you can't get through on the phones, you know the drill. Email me to peter@petergreenberg.com with your name, your phone number, your question, or your problem so we can solve it right here on the air. All right, get out your maps, boys and girls. We're at 32 degrees, 19 minutes north, 64 degrees, 45 minutes west. We're coming to you from the Fairmont, Southampton in Bermuda, and having a great time here. This is one of those places, you know, people are always asking me, where do you like to go, where do you like to stay, where do you like to visit? And I don't define things like that. I go by, where would I like to live? And Bermuda actually happens to be one of those places. I've always loved it since I came here at the ripe young age of, well, we're not going to talk about how far back that goes, but very few things have changed, which is what I like about it. It's a very manageable place. And for those of you who are geographically challenged, we are not in the Caribbean. Most people think Bermuda is in the Caribbean. It's not. It's in the Atlantic. For most people who think it's just one island, you're wrong. It's an archipelago of more than 180 islands, about 640 miles off the coast of North Carolina. But the cool thing about Bermuda is we're only about an hour and 50-minute flight from New York. Lots to be talked about that. But let's go some of the emails right away. We got one from Daniel in Miami, Florida. My family and I are tentatively planning a trip to New York City, beginning December 30th through January of 2011. We live in Miami, Florida. Our 14-year-old daughter has never seen snow. We may be luck out and she'll get to see it. Now, people who live in New York don't think you're lucking out, but that's another issue. We would like to stay at a hotel near where the action is. We would like to witness the New Year's parades, visit the interesting sights, blah, blah, blah. Where do you think we should stay? Okay, I got a news bulletin for you. If you're coming in during the Christmas holidays, you're not going to stay in Manhattan. It's going to be overcrowded. It's going to be highly expensive. And the one thing about New York, which is great, we got great mass transit. You know where you're going to stay? Don't laugh. You're going to stay in Brooklyn. There are a lot of great hotels there that are going to be one-third the cost of your stay in New York, and you will be within 5 blocks walk of a subway, which will get you in about 9 minutes to the middle of Times Square. Everybody wants to stay in Midtown. There's no such definition of Midtown in Manhattan because it means different things to different people. So, Daniel, do yourself a favor. Check out the hotels in Brooklyn, even a couple in Queens, and then just get right by mass transit, either the bus or the subway, and then you get to be right where you want to be without the craziness and your wallet, and even I will thank you. Here's one from Brandy in San Francisco. I paid attention and twice invoked Rule 240 because you mentioned it in columns and TV interviews. Both happened after egregious airline errors, and both times you got much better attention when we demonstrated our knowledge of the rule. And we actually got our flights. We all got confirmed and checked in at the gate. We got seats. Now, with all the recent changes, can you comment, is Rule 240 still applicable? Well, before I answer that question, Brandy, I better let everybody know what Rule 240 is. Rule 240 is an old rule left over from the days of the Civil Aeronautics Board, but it made its way in the transition to the Department of Transportation after deregulation. And here's what it says, and anybody listening to the show, you'll thank me if you ever have to use it. It says the following: in the event of any flight irregularity of any kind other than weather, it almost sounds like the plane is constipated, but let's get through this. That means if there's a mechanical or they're missing a crew member or the plane's late getting in from somewhere else that has nothing to do with weather, and you invoke Rule 240, what it requires the airline to do is to take your ticket and endorse it over to the next available flight. Not their next available flight, which may not leave till next Tuesday, the next available flight on any airline in which it has an agreement. So the airlines that don't qualify for this would be Southwest, JetBlue, AirTran, the airlines that don't have interline agreements. But the legacy carriers, Continental, American, Delta, United, even Frontier, Alaska, they all do qualify for that. And now, when you mention Rule 240, the flight attendant won't know what you're talking about. You need to do it to a gate attendant or one of the supervisors, and they will then look at you like deer in the headlights for about 3 seconds to realize that, oh, my God, you know. And they might tell you that Rule 240 doesn't exist. Well, it does. It's been modified in airline terms. It's now known as Rule 12020, but it doesn't matter. Everybody knows it colloquially as 240. In fact, if you really want to be cool, you just walk up to them and say, hey, can you 240 me? And they'll know exactly what you mean. Now, obviously, if your flight that gets delayed is the last flight of the day on any airline, you can invoke Rule 240 all you want. You're not going anywhere. So if it's, you know, if there are other flights, by the way, you'll go. And especially if you're not checking any bags, because your bags are still going to be on your originating flight, which is one of the reasons why I never check bags. But 240 is actually your friend, which you already know, Brandy, because you revoked it twice and it worked. And the airlines tell you it doesn't work, it works. Here's one from Susan in Los Angeles. Please help. My one and only sister is about to have a baby. Unfortunately, I live in Los Angeles, and she lives in Arlington, Virginia. She is due on the 10th of December, but who knows when the little one will decide to join us. That's right. Let's book that famous I'm pregnant and don't know where I'm going to deliver. No, it doesn't work that way. Is there any way for me to book a last-minute flight without paying one arm and a leg? Is there any airline that may work with my situation? Well, of course there is. And the way that that works is a number of airlines now actually sell one-way tickets. Thank God, because in the old days, you used to require you to stay over a Saturday night, book 2 weeks in advance. Your middle name had to be Murray, and you had to have a snowmobile before you got a discount. So the good news is JetBlue, Southwest, are two airlines that I know of that will actually sell you one-way tickets. And that's about the best you can do. Or this is the best possible time to try to redeem your frequent flyer miles. And the best way you can do that is just redeem your frequent flyer miles for a ticket between Los Angeles and Virginia anytime in December. And then at least you have that ticket document in your hand. You can actually move it to different flights. You know, don't let them worry about round trip, because you don't know when she's due, which means you don't know when you're going and you don't know when you're coming back. It's the day of the one-way ticket. Here's one from Melissa in Hawaii. Is there any way we can get change fees or anything waived for needing to cancel change flight tickets with Alaska Airlines due to medical reasons? Well, of course there is. It's called travel insurance. Airlines, by the end of this year, this is scary now, fasten your seatbelts, will generate over $13 billion in ancillary revenue from change fees, in which there's no labor involved at all, by the way. In fact, they make more money from change fees than actually operating the flights. Think about that. Check bags, pillows, blankets. I want them to charge me $40 for the hazmat suit I have to wear to touch that blanket, but that's another issue. So what you want to do is get yourself trip cancellation and interruption insurance. But here's the kind of a red flag here, Melissa. Not every policy is alike. Trip cancellation and interruption policies vary. One policy will only cover you if the airline cancels. What about you? You know, and if you want to cancel from reasons of sickness, you've got to have, you know, basically a doctor and a medical team with you at all times. I mean, it gets a little crazy. What you want to do is get a policy that allows you to cancel for any reason. Now, that premium gets a little higher. It goes from 9% to about 16% of the cost of your ticket. Now, if you're only flying on a Southwest Airlines ticket between New York and Chicago for the rest of your life and it's a $59 ticket, why would you even buy the insurance? But if it's an expensive ticket, you might want to change your deal and do it from the perspective of being able to cancel for any reason whatsoever. So remember, read the fine print, but you're never going to get the change fees waived from the airlines when they're making that much money. Why would they do that for you or anybody else? And they certainly don't do it for me. When we come back, more about the Bermuda you didn't even know existed and how to have a great time here off the brochure. That's right. If it's in the brochure, I don't want to know about it, and neither do you. When we come back, more from the Fairmont Southampton in Bermuda. Peter Greenberg Worldwide back right after this.
The Peter Greenberg Worldwide phone lines are open now, so call us at 1-888-887-3837. That's 1-888-88-PETER. Travel question or comment? Need advice? Jump on board now by calling the show at 1-888-88-PETER. That's 1-888-887-3837. Once again, here's your host, Peter Greenberg.
And welcome back. Peter Greenberg Worldwide here on this weekend, taking your calls at 888-887-3837. That's 888-88-PETER. If you can't get through on the phones, you know the drill, boys and girls. Email me to peter@petergreenberg.com with your name, phone number, question, or problem so we can solve it right here on the air. And as we always do at this time every week, I encourage you to go to our website, which has the most imaginative name possible, petergreenberg.com. to basically get that list, that comprehensive list of all the resources of aid and relief organizations doing all that hard work in Haiti, in Western China, in Chile, and of course in the Gulf. It may not be on the front pages of your newspaper, but it's certainly on the front pages of ours, because the rebuilding efforts in Haiti will take another 9 to 10 years. We're dealing with a generation of work that needs to be done out there. And yes, you can always donate money on your cell phone, but for me, what's more important is for you to donate you, and that is to get off your you-know-what and look at that list and realize what you can bring to the party and help other people. And when you do that, guess what? You become the party, and it's the best gift you can ever give yourself, because you're giving back. You know, we always like to talk about destinations in terms of experiences and things you can do that are definitely off the brochure. And joining me now, somebody who knows a little bit about that, he now lives here and just wrote a piece in the New York Times about all the things you can do in Bermuda in 36 hours. Not that people have only 36 hours, but his name, David Lahuda. Hey, David.
Hey, thanks.
But, you know, the thing that I love about you the best is how you got here. And it all goes back indirectly to Fire Island, New York, where people who know this show know I spend an inordinate amount of time and have been since I'm 6 months old. But how did you get from Fire Island, New York to Bermuda?
Well, it's been a long story. It actually brought me to St. Croix first, which is where I met my wife, and I have her to thank for coming here to Bermuda. After she and I met, after winning a bartending contest in Fire Island.
You won a I love this. He wins a bartending contest in Fire Island. How do you win that? How many people were drunk who voted? That's what I want to know.
Enough. Let's just say that. But basically, it brought me down to St. Croix because the contest was sponsored by Cruisin' Rum, and I moved down to St. Croix and. A beautiful lady walked into a bar, and the rest, as they say, is history. And so she and I got married, and, you know, in Bermuda is a large reinsurance, insurance, and financial sector, and she was working at a firm in New York when she was tapped to pursue an opportunity here in Bermuda.
So she dragged you here.
That's right. You know, I'll tell you, I did not come kicking and screaming. That's...
So you won the bartending contest, then you won the woman.
Yeah, that's right. She was the grand prize of all.
All right. So here you are in Bermuda. I mean, so it's a brave new world for you, too, because you've only been here how many months?
About 18 months now.
All right. So as the newbie here, you're seeing it through different eyes. You know, you're not a local yet. But you did do the piece in the New York Times about what to do in 36 hours.
Absolutely.
Here.
Absolutely.
All right. So run down the list of things that are not necessarily in the brochure or that are in the brochure, but you can do a different way.
Sure thing. Well, you know, there are so many hidden gems, secluded spots here in Bermuda that I really love. And believe it or not, I checked my Fromer's guidebook last night to see if one of my favorites was in there, and it actually wasn't. So it really goes to show that there are some beautiful spots not in the guidebook, not in the brochure. One of those is Cooper's Island Nature Preserve, which is on the east end of the island in St. David's. And it really is one of the most beautiful parts of Bermuda. It actually used to be a U.S. military base for about 56 years. And in 1996, it was handed over to Bermuda and is now this beautiful nature preserve.
What people don't realize about Bermuda is the reason why it was a U.S. Navy base is we used to be sub-spotting out here. We had a big sub-chasing base out here that we were looking for the Russian subs because they would be coming that close to the U.S.
Yeah, it's really amazing the narrative of Bermuda within the greater scheme of things and the wars and conflicts throughout the years. But Cooper's Island is now just one of the most pristine spots on the island. You could just find your own slice of secluded beach, hike the nature trails there. It does take a while to get out there, but that's what makes it special.
One of the things for me, every time I've come to the Bermuda, and sadly for me, not sadly for him, he retired, the cab drivers here are storytellers. And there was a cab driver here for years named Vince Cann, C-A-N-N, and he used to take me around. We'd go into St. George, and he'd take me to the graveyards. Mm. Now, why would you go to a graveyard in Bermuda? I'll tell you why you go, because the gravestones, those grave markers, tell exact narrative stories.
Sure.
It's not like Joe Blow, 1705 to 1790. It's Joe Blow was standing on the yardarm of the ship when he fell. It was all chiseled into stone,
right.
Fell over, lingered for 9 days, and then he died.
Sure.
Or they would talk about, the outbreak of scarlet fever. Mm-hmm. And you learn the entire history of an entire parish just by reading those gravestones.
Yeah, it's quite amazing, especially out in St. George's. There's so much great history. It is a UNESCO World Heritage Site, which is a bit of a cliche these days. But even so, it's still very much its old colonial self. You'll see, small labyrinth alleyways, beautiful colonial architecture. And it really is like walking back in time.
And one more thing about UNESCO World Heritage Sites. Just because a destination tells you it has one doesn't mean it's well-preserved or well-presented.
Agreed.
Here it is. It's not bad.
Agreed.
Okay, I got a question for you.
Sure.
Are you ever wearing Bermuda shorts?
You know what? I don't wear Bermuda shorts that often, but it's a great way to stay cool. I mean, you take a walk through town and you'll see all the businessmen all the time, you know, going to work in their knee-high socks and shorts. And, you know, I think it's great. I think it's really charming.
Okay. Now, speaking from your worldwide perspective as a bartender and a contest winner.
Sure.
Okay. Where's the best place to get a drink in town?
The best place to get a drink. Well, let's see. I really like places that are on the beach. And to tell you the truth, there aren't many beach bars here because the truth is, you know, as you said before, Bermuda is not the Caribbean, right? So it's not the no shoes, no shirt, no problem Caribbean that you get in the South.
What I like about Bermuda, and this may date me a little bit, but it's not party town all the time.
Well, that's true. And, you know, and to answer your question, you know, folks might want to stop in at the Swizzle East. I like the original Swizzle, which is closer to the airport.
Hey, look, when it comes to Swizzle, I go for the original.
There you go. Yeah. It's the Swizzle Inn on the East End, and it's kind of ramshackle. There are business cards posted up everywhere. People have graffiti on the walls, and of course, that's where you're going to get your picture of the original Bermuda Rum Swizzle. That said, you know, you could pretty much walk into any bar here and get a Dark and Stormy. You find me
What is a Dark and Stormy?
Dark and Stormy is Gosling's Black Seal Rum and ginger beer. I like mine with a slice of lime. You won't get you'd have to ask a bartender to put a lime in it because traditionally it's served without a lime, but I do think a bit of citrus kind of breaks the sweetness of the drink a little bit.
Okay, and Gosling's is produced where?
Gosling's is made right here in Bermuda.
I know. That's the cool thing about it. You can actually go there and almost make your own.
Yeah, it's true, but it's really a fantastic cocktail. So, you know, you walk into any bar, ask for a Dark and Stormy, and I think you'll be pleased.
And after an hour and a half, you're Dark and Stormy.
Yeah, that's right. Or as they say at the Swizzle Inn, you're going to swizzle in and swagger out.
Oh, and you know that brochure then, don't you?
Yes, okay. Yeah.
All right, so we got the happy hour candle here.
Right.
Right. But where do you like to go to eat that's not in the brochure?
Where do I like to go to eat that's not in the brochure? I like to go to eat. You know, it's another thing. You know, when I lived in St. Croix, I used to love to go to the Roach Coach, which was basically a food truck on the side of the road that had great rice and beans and Johnny Cakes and all these things. Again, that sort of thing doesn't exist here, right? So, but I do like my favorite bowl of fish chowder at the Hog Pan.
You cannot go to a restaurant in Bermuda and not get a chowder on the menu.
Well, it's true, and people should be encouraged to order the chowder many times while they stay here because it is so very different from restaurant to restaurant. People take great pride in their fish chowder recipes, and you know it's traditionally served with sherry peppers and Gosling's and a dash of Gosling's rum, and it's really quite fantastic.
So we're back to the rum, aren't we?
It's all about the rum.
All about the rum. Now, when first timers first come here, obviously that's why they're called first timers. They always make the classic mistake of renting the moped, and next thing you know, they're at the first aid station.
Sure.
Because you're driving on the wrong side of the road, and you're not paying attention because you're looking around at everything else.
Sure.
So you just have to be careful about that, although I'd be the first one to jump on one of those because it's a great way to see the island.
It's a great way to see the island. It's not the most cost-effective way to see the island. If people want to get around, and if they were worried about riding the scooter, or it's called a bike locally, you know, I'd say hop on the bus. The transportation system here is really widely available. It's very inexpensive. But that said, if you're worried about, hopping on a scooter and getting into an accident, I say rent a boat. You want to talk about things that are off the brochure. One of my favorite things to do is go to a place called H2O Water Sports. It's out of Cambridge Beaches. They'll rent you a 17-foot VCAT. You'll get a 40 Mercury engine on the back, which is the biggest engine you could get as a renter.
Because of liability.
That's right. But it's only about $200 for 6 hours. And man, you could just cruise to your heart's content, at your leisure all day, moor up in sandbars out by Pompano Beach, explore the Paradise Lakes, moor out, you see beautiful shipwrecks. It's really a great way to experience at your own leisure.
You know what? Anytime you can let me bareboat a powerboat, I am absolutely taking that deal.
Absolutely. You know, and again, it's not that expensive. $200 for about 6 hours doesn't include
that. And you take three or four of your friends and you chip in, it's $50 a person.
Absolutely. It's a really great deal.
All right. David LaHuda, of course, you can read about him in the New York Times, or come here and just order a Dark and Stormy. He's probably pouring. Hey, David, thanks again. We really appreciate that.
Got it.
When we come back, we're going to take a little more trip on the water, only we're going down. Back with more of Under Bermuda with Peter Greenberg Worldwide from the Fairmont, Southampton, right after this.
To participate in the program and speak with Peter Greenberg, call 1-888-887-3837. Or visit PeterGreenberg.com. This segment of Peter Greenberg Worldwide is proudly brought to you by
Avis. Avis, we try harder.
Now back to Peter Greenberg.
And we're back. Peter Greenberg here with you from the Fairmont Southampton in Bermuda, taking your calls at 888-887-3837. That's 888-88-PETER. If you can't get through on the phones, you know the drill, boys and girls. Email me to peter at petergreenberg.com with your name, phone number, question or problem. We'll be back with you to solve it right on the air. We were just talking to David LaHuda, who, of course, won a bartending contest in Far Island, New York. And next thing you know, he's in Bermuda and writing stories in the New York Times on what to do here from a local's perspective. Well, somebody who is more of a local than anybody else I know, because she was born and raised here and runs something called the Bermuda Underwater Exploration Institute. So we're going to go from on top of the water with David to under the water with Wendy Tucker. Hey, Wendy.
Hi, how are you doing?
I'm doing just fine. I mean, people forget, you know, when you think about Bermuda and you look at it on the map, and I know most people are geographically challenged, but I'm going to help everybody through this. It's a really great wreck divers experience, isn't it?
It's wonderful. We have a huge platform of about 250 square miles. And the deepest area is 50 feet, gorgeous reefs, growth, lots of fish.
The deepest area is only 50 feet?
Yep. And then we're on a seamount, and it goes down 12,000 feet.
Which it's volcanic again.
Yes, yes, yeah.
I mean, most people don't realize that so many of the islands here are lava.
Yes, yeah.
And people think of just Hawaii, and it's not. It's
here. No. And then you come up in the shallow, and it's sandstone. And that's why we get the gorgeous beaches, the pink coral and elbow beach. So there's lots to do around here in shallow water.
Which is great, because you can't get in that much trouble.
No.
But what are you going to see down there? I mean, how many of the different wrecks have you identified?
Well, about, I guess, between 150, 200 wrecks, and they vary.
So obviously they didn't realize how shallow it was.
No. You can come up quite close to South Shore, and then off in the north it goes out 8 miles, so ships would cut across and wreck.
Well, tell me about the Institute. When did you start it and why?
Well, we started in 1997. We opened, but Bermuda
had... So you're sort of like late to the game when you think about it.
Yes, yeah, very late. Bermuda had not had a visitor attraction since 1926, and we thought it was time. And what else but about the ocean.
But to also protect it.
Yes. Yeah,
so you have rules. You're taking nothing from the floor.
No, very strict rules, and we talk about that we call it BUEI. And you can look in, but not take.
But if you want to look above water, you got some great exhibits.
Yes. Yeah. We have a unique collection of exhibits. We talk about, of course, the Bermuda Triangle that everyone's interested in. We have a permanent Titanic exhibit, which very few places in the world have.
Now, what's the connection between Bermuda and the Titanic?
We have a shipwreck off of Bermuda that was built in the same shipyard, has the same bench ends and deck windows as the Titanic.
So that's your excuse.
Yes, that's okay,
I just want to make sure you got that one down.
Yeah.
Because we know the Titanic's not here.
No, for sure. And Bermuda's seamount is approximately 12,000 feet, which is the depth of the Titanic.
Well, since you started the Institute in 1996, what was the most interesting discovery you've made?
A sunken cedar forest. The tide is coming up. The cedar trees were in about 30 feet of water. So, and they're approximately 7,290 years old.
So that was originally a forest that's now been covered by the ocean?
Yes, exactly.
And are the trees petrified?
No. We raised one, and when we cut some of the root system, you could still smell the cedar. And then after Hurricane Fabian, the cedar forest was washed away. So we know that was the worst hurricane Bermuda had had in over 7,000 years.
And when was that hurricane?
2003.
So, and you were here for that one?
Yes, I was.
And you survived?
Yes, we did.
What's the one thing that when people go diving, obviously you can do certification in pools and stuff like
yes.
that, but when you're dealing with only 50 feet of water, the sort of false security is, well, you can, as I said it before earlier, you can't get in trouble, but you have to be careful.
Yes, yeah, always be careful. It's always the unknown. You start enjoying what you're looking at. You're looking at a shipwreck. You wander off further into the deep, or you begin to run out of air.
I like the idea that you wander off further into the deep.
Yeah.
Sounds like a beginning of a beautiful story that has a very bad ending. The one part about Bermuda that I love, and I know why they did it, it had nothing to do with making my life easier, it was to protect the hoteliers here, is the cruise ship moratorium, meaning you can't have that many cruise ships in town at any one time, yeah. Which I think is just brilliant.
Yeah, just can't cope with the visitors.
Not enough bathrooms.
No, and we want everyone to have a good experience here.
So in a given day, how many different trips can I take through that may be sanctioned by you or that you know about where I can not get into trouble and wander off into the deep and actually have a great time?
Yeah, I'd just say about 10 or 15. You can go sailing, boating, diving, anything, beach.
You have a website?
Yes, we do.
Let me hear it.
www.buei.org.
And at your exhibits, is there a charge to go see them?
Yes, $12.50 for adults, $10 for children, 6 to 16, and free for them.
Free for people who've wandered off into the deep.
Deep.
I just
exactly.
want to make sure we have that
yep,
under control.
Yep, we love the deep.
All right, Wendy Tucker, the director of the Bermuda Underwater Exploration Institute, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
We appreciate that. And by the way, we're now going to go from under the deep to on top of the water. We're going everywhere today. We're going to go hiking. We're going to go biking. Things that are not necessarily in the brochure, but the best thing I like about Bermuda, one of the most manageable destinations, which is so close to the United States, and no, it's not in the Caribbean. It's in the Atlantic. And the best time to go? Right about now when nobody else is here. That's the cool part. Back with more of Peter Greenberg Worldwide right after these messages.
Now to talk to Peter Greenberg at 1-888-887-3837 or email him at peter@petergreenberg.com. This segment of Peter Greenberg Worldwide is proudly brought to you by
Continental Airlines. With over 260 destinations in more than 50 countries, Continental makes it easy to create your own worldwide tour. Continental Airlines. Work hard. Fly right.
Now back to Peter Greenberg.
43 minutes after the hour, Peter Greenberg here with you from the Fairmont, Southampton in Bermuda. Taking your calls at 888-887-3837. That's 888-88-PETER. And if you can't get through on the phones, you know the drill. Email me to peter@petergreenberg.com with your name, phone number, question, or problem. We will solve it right here on the air. You know, when we talk about an island, an archipelago, if you will, it's 640 miles off the coast of North Carolina, only about an hour and 50-minute flight from New York. There are actually people who actually commute here from New York all the time because it's such an easy, manageable place. In fact, one of the great rumors, but it's true, is that the former president of Pan Am, a guy named Ed Acker, who had a house down here, he rearranged the entire schedule of the airline. So there was always a 7 p.m. flight on a Friday night from JFK to Bermuda and a 7 o'clock flight Monday morning from Bermuda back to JFK. And, you know, it made it work for him. And even though American Airlines took over the route, they're basically still flying that schedule because so many people really use it to commute. Interesting stuff about a place you think is a lot further away than it really is. Well, it's one thing to know about where it's located. It's another thing to know what it actually is when you get here. And joining me now, somebody who knows a little bit about that. And in fact, he's a hiker. He's a lecturer. He is someone who basically came here about 20 years ago, if I remember correctly.
That's right.
And Tim Rogers, welcome.
Thank you, Peter.
But what brought you here the first time? I have to ask everybody that because, you know, David LaHuda basically won a bartending contest on Fire Island. Next thing you know, he's in St. Croix. Next thing you know, he's in Bermuda because he meets his wife. What's your excuse?
Mine's a love story.
Oh, no. Here we go again.
I was studying for a doctorate in England, and the kind of deal is that students at that point are going to become lecturers or researchers, and I was sent to Ireland and met a beautiful girl.
Okay,
so
drinking was involved again. It's unbelievable.
Absolutely. Yeah, it always helps.
I know. Does she still remember you?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, cool.
Yeah.
All right, so that's what brought you here.
Sure.
All right, what's kept you here?
A love for an island that there's nothing to compare. I mean, we have an island in Bermuda called Nonsuch, which means unparalleled, and I think the whole of Bermuda is unparalleled.
So when people come here, I mean, they know about golf and they know about, you know, the pink, but it's a whole lot more than that.
Oh, you betcha. Yeah.
All right, but what's the stuff for you that's not in the brochure? David talked about some of his little places. What about for you?
Sure. the fact that we have such a long, rich history, so well documented. I mean, when I take folks to the town of St. George, which goes back 400 years, that every little corner that you turn is a piece of history, and the fact that it ties in with English history and American history and Spanish history.
Because at one point everybody was battling over Bermuda. They wanted it.
Absolutely, yeah. We were the prize, if you will, and Britain got it.
And St. George was named for?
Well, St. George was named for the patron saint of England,
right.
St. George. And then we have the confusion that you've got Sir George, who
yes.
was the Englishman that crash-landed here in 1609. And he's the guy that got the British settled here.
So basically it was an accident.
It was a crash landing, yeah, absolutely,
yeah.
An accident.
Indeed. And you know, we talk about some of the history here, but people forget there's a train history here, too.
Absolutely, and from the Fairmont, it's just a step away. I mean, it's a walk I do with guests of this hotel and others on an almost daily basis. It ran from one end of the island to the other and only lasted for 17 years.
And it was mostly not for passengers, as much as it was for agriculture, wasn't it?
It moved a lot of freight and food. I mean, the famous Bermuda onions were shipped from this part of the country to the center, Hamilton, and shipped away to New York and elsewhere.
Okay, you have to answer a question for me. I've never figured this out. Every time I go to Front Street, every store there sells sweaters. I've never seen more sweaters on sale in my life. It's like a sweater conspiracy. What is that?
You know, I really don't know the answer to that one, Peter. You stumped me. But, I mean, people seem to, as you say, it's so close.
I mean, was
to,
it a shipment that kind of washed ashore with sweaters? They've been trying to unload them for years?
I think we stole them along with the gold and silver. People, as you say, we're so close to the Northeast. I mean, people would fly into Bermuda just to buy sweaters.
I'm not. And, it's amazing. I mean, if you are a sweater fanatic, boy, have I got a place for you.
Absolutely.
Unbelievable.
Yeah, and decent prices for sure.
Well, they have sweater competition, of course. Bottom line, though, it's even though the train's no longer running, there's the trail.
There is the walking trail, which is my lifeblood, and it's we're a densely populated island. There's no doubt about it. But you get onto those railway trails, and what I like to do is to take people there, and they get to realize that you're stepping back in time, and you're getting away. You're totally de-stressing, and that's what Bermuda's about, de-stressing.
And you know what? A little bit of rum and a little bit of...
That helps, yeah. The path meanders and you can too.
Tim Rogers, the owner of Bermuda Lectures and Tours, and someone who, was drinking, and next thing you know, he was in Bermuda. Thanks, man. I really appreciate that.
Thank you, Peter.
We'll be right back from the Fairmont, Southampton, right after this.
The Peter Greenberg Worldwide phone lines are open now, so call us at 1-888-88-PETER. That's 1-888-887-3837. This segment of Peter Greenberg Worldwide is proudly brought to you by
Travel Guard Insurance. For travel insurance plans for the unexpected, see your travel agent or visit TravelGuard.com for affordable travel insurance protection from Travel Guard.
Now back to Peter Greenberg.
52 minutes after the hour, Peter Greenberg here with you from the Fairmont Southampton in Bermuda, taking your calls at 888-887-3837. That's 888-88-PETER. If you can't get through on the phones, you know the drill, boys and girls. Email me to peter@petergreenberg.com with your name, phone number, question, or problem. We'll solve it right here on the air. We've been talking with Tim Rogers, the owner of Bermuda Lectures and Tours. And we talked about the trains. We talked about the history a little bit. But for me, and I mentioned this earlier on the show with David LaHuta, that the cab drivers here are all great storytellers.
Oh, you bet.
And you're not going to be driving very fast, so there's time to talk.
Sure.
Right?
Absolutely.
And one of them used to take me down to some of the graveyards, and we'd look at the gravestones, because right. Every gravestone, I'm sure you do this as well, I mean, tells the story of the person. But it also tells you the story of what diseases were prevalent at the time, what wars were being fought at the time, what the medical care was and wasn't at
right.
the time.
Yeah.
I mean, do you find that as fascinating as I do?
I absolutely do. I mean, the Royal Naval Dockyard at the far west end of the island is a Royal Naval Cemetery, and almost every gravestone there records the cause of death. And as you say, we went through periods of yellow fever, so you see just yellow fever, yellow fever, yellow fever, yellow jack, as it was called. And there's one gravestone which is particularly interesting. It talks about being buried one day and died the next, which if you stop and think about that, that's a little bit worrying.
Yeah. Well, especially since they admitted it on the gravestone.
Absolutely.
That was the days before malpractice, yeah.
Yeah.
But what was interesting about those grave markers is that the people who were actually chiseling those words in there, I mean, they weren't just abbreviating, they were telling stories.
Absolutely, yeah.
I mean, they were saying, he fell from the mast, we tried to save him, he lingered for a while, then he died. I mean, it was like, that's a lot to put on a gravestone.
Absolutely. Well, I think it's a case of they might be next, and so you do a good job in terms of creating that stone because you want a good fitting memorial as well.
What's the one thing that surprises you about the history of Bermuda?
That people don't know it as much as anything else. I mean, I see so many tourists coming into Bermuda, into the hotels that I go and lecture to, and they say, oh, you know, we just never realized that you guys had a history. And
Wait, hold it. Listen to what you just said. Everybody has a history.
They don't realize just maybe how interconnected our history is. I mean, I was a science major originally, so you start to look at the interconnections of science, and then you realize that history is just the same. Something that happened on the other side of the world ends up having an influence in Bermuda, and that's kind of neat to pull out. I mean, I'm kind of a bit of a nerd. I'm an academic, and so I want to try and make it enjoyable for the guests.
Sure.
But by the time we've finished, you know, we realize that just on that walk along the trail or through the dockyard or through Hamilton, you've actually learned something and can take something away which will enrich you.
Now, of course, when you land at the airport, you're immediately reminded that, well, Queen Elizabeth still hangs out here every once in a while.
Yes.
I mean, her picture is very prominently displayed at the airport.
Absolutely.
The British have been here since what year?
1609.
That's right. And do you still have a governor general?
We have a governor.
Yeah, but it's more ceremonial, I'm sure.
It really is, yes, absolutely.
Because it's run by a parliament and a prime minister.
We've been self-governing for over 300 years, yes, absolutely.
So why don't you throw the British out? I have to ask that question.
It's a question that's often asked, but I think, to be honest, we like the stability that Britain's flag and the image of the Queen represents to Bermuda. And I don't think we're as innately British as the British might believe, but for North Americans coming in, you know, there's something quintessentially British about us. I mean, the afternoon teas that hotels offer, which...
Well, a lot of your cottage colonies here, I mean, Cambridge Beaches, I mean, all those were really for the British holidaymakers.
Absolutely, yes, that came for months on end. And, I mean, that's one of the things that people don't realize is that we used to be a winter resort rather than a summer resort. It was just a great place to overwinter. And then it's only really in the last 50, 60 years that we've become this fabulous summer destination for the hiking, the biking, the walking, the jogging, and the underwater and above water activities.
And the derivation of the Bermuda Short?
Well, that was actually brought in from India originally. I mean, the dockyard was built by British servicemen that had last spent time along the Malabar Plains of western India, and they just found the climate there too hot, and the same here. So rather than just wear shorts with knobbly knees, they put on the long socks, and so just leave a couple of inches of exposed knee, and away you go.
A couple of inches of exposed knee. I love it. With enough rum, doesn't matter.
It absolutely. What, in the knee?
It all depends on who's wearing it.
Absolutely, Peter.
It's sort of like, you know, hot pants. There's certain people who shouldn't be wearing hot pants.
You shouldn't go
there.
And
there are certain people who should not be wearing Bermuda shorts. I'm sorry. I'm sorry.
I agree.
Okay. I mean, you know, you go to any of the stores here, every hotel's got them, and you think you're in Bermuda, you got to wear Bermuda shorts.
Right.
Not so fast, buddy.
Right.
You know?
Yeah. Well, we gave Prince Philip a pair when himself and the Queen came last year.
Did he wear them?
He wore them, absolutely, and he looked damn good in them, yeah.
Does he remember he wore them?
I don't think he had any rum swizzle, but I can't, can't be sure.
All right, Tim Rogers, thanks again, man. I really appreciate that. Of course, when you come here, Bermuda Lectures and Tours, he'll take you around. And if he wants you to wear a pair of Bermuda shorts, don't do it. Don't do it. Hey, that music means we're out of time for this hour. For those stations leaving us, have a great rest of your weekend. For those stations sticking around, we got a whole lot more coming from the Fairmont in Southampton in Bermuda. More with Peter Greenberg Worldwide without their Bermuda shorts right after this.
You've been listening to Peter Greenberg Worldwide. Visit our website at www.petergreenberg.com. Live from around the world, it's time for Peter Greenberg Worldwide with America's number one frontline travel news journalist. Get on the phone now and call 1-888-887-3837. That's 1-888-88-PETER. And now, the man who travels over 400,000 miles each year, the travel detective, Peter Greenberg.
And welcome aboard Peter Greenberg Worldwide. Hope you're having a wonderful weekend where you happen to be. Of course, we've been living on airplanes just about every single day, but that should come as no surprise to those who listen to this show. Of course, if you want to get in touch with me, give me a call, 888-887-3837. That's 888-88-PETER. And if you can't get through on the phones, you know the drill, boys and girls. Email me to peter@petergreenberg.com with your name, phone number, question, or problem. We will solve it right here on the air. And where is here? Well, get out your maps, boys and girls. 32 degrees, 19 minutes north, 64 degrees, 45 minutes west. We are coming to you from the Fairmont, Southampton, in Bermuda. And for those of you who do get maps, here's a surprise. We're not in the Caribbean. I keep telling you this. We are 640 miles off the coast of North Carolina in the Atlantic. And it's not one island. It's an archipelago of more than 180 islands. Lots of stuff to see. Let's go right to the emails first. We've got one from Tom in Newtown, Pennsylvania. I want to fly a round trip from Philadelphia to Cancun in January. The best fare is nonstop flights on U.S. Air for about $450. But if I go to BWI Baltimore, I can get a one-stop flight for about $300, and it goes through Philadelphia. How does that happen? Well, it's called airline scheduling and yield. There makes no sense about it, but it's been going on for years. It's a dark science. I'll give you another example. You want to go from Los Angeles to Dallas, it's maybe $400. But if you want to go from Los Angeles to Austin on a flight that stops in Dallas, it's $290. On the same airline, on the exact same flight. It makes no sense. I'll give you an even better one for those people who want to fly first class. You want to fly first class from Los Angeles to New York, that first class ticket is $4,500. But if you want to fly from from Los Angeles to New York, but you want to stop first and have a great vacation in Jamaica or even Bermuda, that first class ticket is $2,800 because it's the way it's priced. Flights to this part of the world, either to Bermuda or Jamaica, are listed as business class flights, but it's the same plane, the same seat, and the same service. So you've just saved $1,700 and given yourself a vacation in Bermuda or in Jamaica, and nobody understands that, and the airlines aren't going to tell you that. I just told you that. So the answer to your question, Tom, is that's how they price it because they want to do it that way. Now, here's the problem, though. You can't play the hidden city game and get off the plane where you want to get off the plane. You have to take it to where you bought the ticket to. So, guess what? You're going to have to start your flight in BWI to get to Cancun, even though the plane goes through Philadelphia, even though you live in Philadelphia, if you want to save the extra $150. Don't ask me to explain it any more than that, but now you know the deal. Here's one from Liz in Woodmere, New York. It seems that plane tickets over the Christmas break are at an all-time high. Well, aren't I shocked? My family of four is hoping to get to Denver direct from New York City without spending what seems to be a small fortune. The lowest price appears to be over $550 and goes as high as $750. Is it too much to hope the prices will be coming down, or should I throw in the towel and buy before all the seats are gone? Liz, it is too much to hope, and by the way, the price of the towel just went up while we were talking. So here's what you need to do. Think of alternate routing, not necessarily nonstop flights and not necessarily, you know, peak hours. And you might find you'll get that fare for about $450, not $550, if you go through maybe St. Louis or you go through Chicago as opposed to New York to Denver nonstop. That's one suggestion. Or here's another one. You mentioned that you're in New York. Go through one of the secret airports. Go through Islip on Long Island. Southwest Airlines flies there. And you can go from Islip to Midway in Chicago and Midway to Denver. That would be my suggestion. You might find the fares are a little cheaper. Here's one from Stephanie in River Edge, New Jersey. Mr. Greenberg, I was wondering if there are any rules regulating the airline baggage scales. Boy, do I love this question. I purchased a baggage scale at the store, and when it is checked at the airport, the weight is almost off by different amounts. Well, you know what? This is where I get angry. If you go to the store to buy meat or produce or anything they have to weigh, Those scales have to be inspected by the city. You see those little stickers on the scales? That means the inspectors come out to the store to make sure that they're not overcharging you by charging you more weight than what it actually weighs. That's why they have it. They have inspectors for scales. All right, that happens when you go to the store. Who's inspecting the scales at the airport? I want to know. I don't see any stickers saying we inspected it. And I've always gone on the air and told you that you can go out and buy these little handle scales for about $9. They sell them at Brookstone or Magellan's or any of those catalogs, which will actually hook on your bag. And when you lift it up, there's a little LED readout that tells you, here's how much your bag weighs, so you know if you're not overweight before you get to the airport. So when you get out there, show it to them and have them prove to you. Ask them where their certificate of inspection is for that scale. And if they can't provide it, or they want to become real you-know-what bad guys and say you have to go by our weight or you don't get on the plane, that's when you write me with their name, their full name, their title, what scale it was, what counter it was, and we're going to have a ball, because then we'll call the mayor of that city and go visit with him and his inspectors to take a look at what the airlines are doing. It's bad enough they want to charge you for checked bags, but when they rip you off for overweight on a scale that nobody's inspecting, that is a declaration of war. So, and by the way, the difference could be a lot. You know, these airline counter people now are given no discretion at all by their employers. They must charge you or they get penalized, because it's revenue the airlines desperately want. If you're over 3 pounds, over than the 50 pounds that you're allowed to bring, you either take 3 pounds out or they charge you up to $75 more. It's ridiculous. Now, we've had a guy on the show named Ralph Potts who's actually been gone around the world wearing something called a Scott Vest. It's a vest that you wear with 22 separate pockets. You're literally wearing your bag. Everything you can possibly pack in your bag, you're packing in your jacket, which, of course, you take off before you go through security anyway. And how cool is that? They can't charge you overweight because you're wearing it. You know what? Necessity being the mother of invention, Stephanie, before you actually do that, just make sure you get names, titles, and show the scale amount that you have and make sure that they can prove their point, because you shouldn't have to pay for something when you've done your homework. What really gets me angry, the rules that the airlines play by are not necessarily mandated by courts in justice. They're mandated by the airlines, which means they can bend those rules anytime they want because they're the ones who made them, and there's nobody telling them they're going to slap them on the hands. However, if you're saying to me that something has to weigh a certain amount and you're not under the rules of inspection, then there's nobody enforcing that. You know what? I'm the kind of guy, and you may want to know why I was thrown out of every school I ever went to. This is why. If you tell me the speed limit 65 miles an hour, I'm going to ask you why. And if your answer to me is, well, you know, we've done our research, and at 66 miles an hour, you're going to die a horrible death. Okay, I get that concept. Thank you for telling me. I'll drive 50. But if you tell me the speed limit 65 miles an hour, and I ask you why, and your answer is because, or it's our policy, take it or leave it, I'm driving 80 because you haven't made your case. So guess what? If the airlines want to charge you for weight and they can't prove to you that those scales are being inspected, in my book, they haven't made their case, but they've certainly given me one. And bottom line then is, get in touch with me. Write to me at peter@petergreenberg.com. Give us that paper trail of information, and we'll be more than happy to fight that battle, not just for you, but for everybody else, including me, because I just don't like it. When we come back, more of Peter Greenberg Worldwide from the Fairmont Southampton in Bermuda. And we're going to be talking about, well, how are you going to get around here? What's not in the brochure that you need to know about? Because you know how I think about it. If it's in the brochure, I don't want to know about it. We'll be right back.
The Peter Greenberg Worldwide phone lines are open now. So call us at 1-888-887-3837. That's 1-888-88-PETER. Travel question or comment? Need advice? Jump on board now by calling the show at 1-888-88-PETER. That's 1-888-887-3837. Once again, here's your host, Peter Greenberg.
18 minutes after the hour, Peter Greenberg here with you from the Fairmont Southampton in Bermuda, taking your calls at 888-887-3837. That's 888-88-PETER. If you can't get through on the phones, you know the drill. Email me to peter@petergreenberg.com. And as we do every week at this time, I encourage you to go to our website, which has the imaginative name of petergreenberg.com, for one very important reason. We have a wonderful and comprehensive list there of all the aid and relief organizations doing that hard work in Haiti, in Western China, in Chile, and, of course, in the Gulf. It may not be on the front pages of your newspaper or in the evening news, but it stays on the front pages of us right here with you. because the bottom line is there's a rebuilding effort that's going to take not a year, not 2 years, but clearly 10 years in Haiti. They need all the help they can get, and it goes beyond just donating money. When you look at that list, you're going to be surprised at all the things that you can get involved in that speaks to your own level of expertise or physical ability, and get your you-know-what down there. And it's the best vacation you can give yourself, because you're giving back, and what you get back in return is an exponential factor of that. So please check it out at petergreenberg.com. I've been coming to Bermuda since I'm about 25 years old. I came by accident. I cruised in one day. It was just a stop on the itinerary. And from that moment on, even though we were only here for 12 hours, I said, I got to come back. And I've been coming back ever since. And one of the reasons is it's such a manageable place. It speaks to my own comfort zone. But at the same time, there are so many things here that are so big in history that you just discover if there's somebody here to tell you about it. And somebody here who is here to tell me about it is Glenn Jones, who's the CEO of Bermuda.com. So we've gone websited on me.
Yep.
I know we have. But I knew you when you were the press secretary to the prime minister.
Yep, that's right. Met at Shea Stadium.
We made
it
at Shea Stadium when he threw out the first pitch, and then you gave me one of the balls, which is great.
Yeah.
I love it, yeah.
Great.
So, you know, what says Bermuda more than Shea Stadium, you know? And by the way, Shea Stadium is no longer with us.
Right, it is.
Citi Field.
That's
right, yeah. But it was fun to see the prime minister then.
Yeah.
The premier then.
And he had the occasion the season before to throw out the first pitch, but I got...
And by the way, it hasn't helped the Mets at all.
No,
you know that.
I know that.
Here's a news bulletin. You ready? They suck. I just thought I'd mention that on the air. They suck.
Yeah, well, you know, they're struggling a little bit now, but the New Yorkers have the Yankees to get them through these tough times with the
I know,
Mets.
But you know what? I've been a Mets fan since day one. You know why? When I was growing up in New York, anybody in pinstripes, I didn't trust. I'm sorry. And
that's still the case, my goodness.
Of course. But the thing about the Mets is they were always a team that just couldn't do anything right. I remember Jimmy Pearsall, who was playing center field for the Mets, when he hit his 100th career home run, he ran around the bases backwards. I mean, crazy stuff there, right? And 1986, I was around when the famous Bill Buckner situation.
Absolutely. Oh, I remember that. I remember that.
I have an autographed picture today of that ball going under his leg, signed by Bill Buckner and Mookie Wilson.
Really?
Yes, and it's up on my wall. And unfortunately now, my sister, who was then in New York, now lives in Boston, so she doesn't talk to me about that picture.
Wow.
You know, because she's now a diehard Red Sox
yep.
fan. But the bottom line, it was great to see you at Shea Stadium, and even better to see you here in Bermuda.
Yeah, I'm enjoying it. I'm trying to figure out why we're not doing this radio interview on a beach.
Well, you know what? It's called technology right now. See, it's a long extension cord.
Okay.
It's a very long extension cord. But we can see the beach from here.
Yeah, we can see the beach. You know what? October is a pretty good month to go to the beach. I know people who live
I'm a big off-season guy.
Oh, yeah. It's the way to do it.
You know, you want me to come to Bermuda? I'm going to come between October and March when nobody else wants to go because I get to own the place.
Yeah.
And still have a great time.
But the secret's getting out, so you're going to have a little bit of company going forward.
All right, so give me some of the off-season stuff that you could do here that nobody knows about.
Well, for example, this weekend, it's still warm enough to go to the beach. The water temperature's still warm enough for that. And if you're in the Northeast, for example, it's going to be low 60s right now. So you love that.
Yeah.
Golf, year-round. Every day of the year, you can play golf in Bermuda.
Now, if you're not a golfer, though, like me, you get to just drive the cart, which is okay.
Right.
I mean, I like to drive the cart, you know. Yeah. I make believe. And then I go watch the highlights on ESPN. You know, what are you going to do?
Yeah. And then, of course, there's water sports as well that you can take advantage of.
Well, that's, you know, we were talking earlier in the show with David LaHuda about you can actually go charter a powerboat here, which is so cool that most people don't realize you can do that. And for me, as a boat captain, I cannot wait to do that, right? But you got to know where you're going because the water is shallow. And if the water is shallow, it means you can get in trouble.
Yeah. And you know what? There's a smart alternative for people who aren't as comfortable with a power boat because you can also rent a pontoon boat, one of those boats that basically everything stays above water. So if you find some place great that's an island, you can just pull that pontoon boat right up to it. Get right off. Jet ski tours is another way to do it. Most places you go to, you have to do a tour on the ground, but you can get a group of 12 jet skis, you form a gang, and you're out there doing a tour.
Now, you see, I worry about the words jet ski and gang.
I was thinking about it when I said it.
Too late now. I know. No, but the thing is, I love jet ski tours if you know what you're doing and you got somebody with you who can take you into the coves that nobody knows about.
And that's exactly the way they do it here. It is really a fun way to see the island from the water.
All right, what's the most unusual thing here that would be the biggest surprise, even if somebody as jaded as me?
Have you seen the unfinished church?
No.
That is pretty cool. This is a church that
But before you even say that, I remember the old Club Med.
Yeah.
That was built on the grounds of another unfinished church.
Right. Well,
and a fort.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, the unfinished church that I'm speaking about is very near that property.
Yeah.
The former Club Med isn't there anymore, as you
I
might know.
That. That's why we call it the former Club Med. Med.
Yes.
Yeah.
They imploded it spectacularly a couple of years ago. It was pretty
really?
Cool to see. Yeah. In fact, I'd kind of like us to implode something else if we could. Anyway, the unfinished church. Yeah, it's a church that's only about, I don't know, 40% built. There's no roof to it, for example, but it's got those great stone columns.
Yeah.
Some people have weddings in the unfinished church, so you can have a wedding under the sunlight or the moonlight.
Well, the people have the weddings in the unfinished church. Those are people who sign the really big prenups because they know let's just do it.
Yeah, so that's one place, and that's in St. George's, as was the former Club Med. It's a place rich in history with St. Peter's Church, of course, and a former slave burial ground that you can go and get an up-close look at. It's a pretty interesting place.
See, I keep going back to the graveyards here because of the markers. The gravestones, they all tell stories.
Incredible stories. And almost everywhere you go in Bermuda, you're going to find a church. And just about every one of those churches has a graveyard attached to it with those great stories that
you're
talking
about. And, you know, just finding a church is not the big picture. It's actually going to the services, because that is a big deal here. That is a very big deal. And people dress up, and they're in their Sunday finest, and they have great singing. It's the way to do it.
It's true. It's an event. It's taken with the same level of seriousness that Americans take the NFL on Sundays. When they get everything together, they load up the
Wait
truck.
Wait a minute. Are you telling me
tailgating?
Are they tailgating at the church?
No.
Are they betting? Not, are they betting on the service?
Not exactly, but it is done with the same level of passion is what I mean to relay to you.
I think we should start tailgating at the churches.
Well, you know what? It would be big.
It would be big.
It would be big, because a lot of people go to church in Bermuda.
I know. But, you know, it's interesting. I think of two places where I really like going to church services on Sunday when I'm not in the U.S. One is Bermuda, and the other is Fiji, because so much is around it in the community, because you have the parishes here.
Yep.
And people forget, you know, explain the parishes.
Well, we got 9 parishes in Bermuda. They're pretty small geographic areas, and they're like their own communities.
But they're very well defined.
Very well defined. There's clear lines on where they are, where they start, and where they end. And, you know, some parishes have as many as a dozen churches in them. So the church is really a communal place for the people who live in those parishes.
Right. And Tuckerstown?
Tuckerstown is a wonderful place, also rich in history, but
also rich. Hello. That's where Mayor Bloomberg hangs out.
Yes, he has a home there.
No, he has two.
He
has two.
A lovely place there, yes. Yeah. Well, you know, we don't like to tell people's secrets in Bermuda. If you have a home in Tuckerstown, you live peacefully there. We don't bother you much.
I'm not saying we're doing a jet ski tour of the guy's house.
No.
But I'm just letting people know that he commutes. He comes down here almost every weekend.
Yeah, well, you know what? It's because of how close it is.
Yeah.
You know, if it takes less time to get from here, get here between here and Shea Stadium than it does for some people to commute every day to work.
And it takes less time for other teams to get to the World Series than it takes for the Mets. Oh, sorry.
You got to let it go, Peter. But, you know, Tuckerstown now also has a beautiful hotel as well, which
you
is just
like our engineer, Jeff Ryder in New York, made the mistake years ago of buying season tickets to the Mets.
He still has them?
I'm afraid so. And every time we're about to do the show, especially during the summer months, he's complaining because they lost another one. You know, it's just...
Just think if he changed the value of those season tickets in trips to Bermuda, he could have been here a dozen times by now.
That's right. And been happier, because he would have been betting on the parishes. No? He would have been tailgating at the churches? No?
Maybe he could go to the cricket matches in Bermuda. That would be the equivalent, I suppose.
What's an onion?
A Bermudian.
Yeah.
Yeah. We're onions. We grow them. They taste good. It's great soup.
But if you live here, then you're an onion.
I'm an onion. Yeah. Proudly.
What's the biggest export?
I guess it would be onions. I don't even know what it is. I mean, our specialty is services. So tourism, international business, that's what we do. So it doesn't sort of quantify as something that gets on a boat and moves out of here, but that's what we have.
And the cool thing about Bermuda, at least for me, is that it's not crowded, meaning you have a cruise ship moratorium. Only so many ships can be in the harbor at any one time, so people are just not flooding the place. You can get on a bike or a moped. Which, by the way, is by the same, basically the same definition these days, right?
Yep.
Nobody's really
two-wheeler,
on bikes. They're on motorized vehicles. But you do drive on the wrong side of the road.
Now, listen, I'm going to take exception with that.
Okay, but
we have to consider that you drive on the wrong side of the road.
And basically, by the way, we're on the wrong side of time right now.
Oh, so no.
Here we are. Glenn Jones, the CEO of Bermuda.com. Thanks for joining us,
it's
man.
It's good to see you.
When we come back, more from the wrong side of the road, otherwise known as the Fairmont Southampton in Bermuda. Right back after you.
To participate in the program and speak with Peter Greenberg, call 1-888-887-3837. or visit petergreenberg.com. This segment of Peter Greenberg Worldwide is proudly brought to you by
Avis. Avis, we try harder.
Now back to Peter Greenberg.
33 minutes after the hour, Peter Greenberg here with you, coming to you from the Fairmont Southampton in Bermuda, taking your calls at 888-887-3837. That's 888-88-PETER. If you can't get through on the phones, you know the drill, boys and girls. Email me to peter@petergreenberg.com with your name, phone number, question, or problem. We will solve it right here on the air. My next guest knows a little bit about Bermuda, although you wouldn't guess it from his name or where he grew up, but he's here. It's Brooklyn, New York is where he comes from. In fact, his name is Barry Cohen. And what says Bermuda more than Brooklyn and Barry Cohen? And yet, he's the maitre d' at the Waterlot Inn, where I had dinner last night, as a matter of fact. Great dinner. But he's also a TV host, which I love, about what's cooking in Bermuda. So, Barry Cohen, what is cooking in Bermuda?
When you come to Bermuda, it is just unbelievable, the expanse culinary experience that you're going to have here. You know, we cover everything that you can think of as far as cuisine from different parts of the world. For example, you know, you can walk down Front Street. You can look at a Portuguese restaurant, a Barbadian restaurant, a Trinidadian restaurant, English and Irish traditions.
All right, so hold on a second. That begs the question. Is there such a thing as Bermudian food?
Is there such a thing? Sure. You know, Bermudian food over the years has, you know, diminished in its tradition as we've become more multicultural here in Bermuda. So what happened is, you know, there's places that keep pieces of Bermuda cuisine alive.
Like
cassava pie, like...
What is that?
Sweet potato.
Whoa, stop.
Cassava pie is yucca, which is kind of like a potato.
Right.
Okay, we cook it down. We add chicken to it, a bunch of eggs.
Yep.
Lots of eggs. And then we go ahead and, you know, put that all together, kind of like you're cooking meatloaf.
Okay.
And then we slice it down, and it's a very popular breakfast or lunch dish because we could put vegetables in it. Our chicken is very traditional. So, you know, it's just delicious.
Brooklyn, Bermuda, you want to tell me how this happened?
Brooklyn, Bermuda. Well, you know, I got old, Peter. You know, I came to paradise. You know, this is paradise.
What, you woke up one morning and said, I'm leaving Brooklyn? Was this that way?
Well, you know, the journey of life takes you in circles. So, you know, I've been able to, you know, move around the world and with my career and been a corporate manager in the industry for almost 40 years now. So.
Wow. So that witness relocation program is working for you.
It is. It is. You know, I mean, every time the Mets lost, I had to get away.
We're back. Oh, you're not going home then. Nobody's going back.
Nobody's going back.
No one's going back. All right. So here, you've been in Bermuda how long now?
6.5 years.
Okay. In that 6.5 years, and what brought you here to begin with? You still didn't tell me.
Well, I came to open up the Waterlot Inn,
okay.
Steakhouse concept that is now one of the top 10 restaurants in the world, sitting here on a 20-mile island, doing amazingly high volume.
Now, when I had dinner there, by the way, I don't eat meat, so I'm at your steakhouse, but I had a great lobster chowder last night, lobster and corn chowder, which is amazing, right? You had fresh fish, you had rockfish.
Right.
It was very cool. I mean, bottom line is, how much of that stuff is locally sourced?
Well, you know, it's fun because what you mentioned was all local. You know, we're in lobster season right now, and lobster's just, you know, in abundance right now. So, you know, we're doing a lot with that. You see it all over the island. We basically go ahead and have, you know, broiled lobster. We catch it fresh. There's limits here. You know, it's not like in other parts of the world where the guy could go out and harvest up hundreds of lobsters. You know, the fishermen can only get 10 a day.
That's their limit.
That's their limit.
Wow.
You know, so, you know, if you're just a recreational diver, you can only get 2 a day. So it's very well regulated, and therefore we always have a great season for lobster. So we use that in the chowder, obviously. We do a surf and turf, and you'll see that all over the island. You know, lobster used many different ways, as well as the fishermen themselves. You know, something that adds to the personality of Bermuda is right on the street corner is a guy with a cooler, you know, with fresh fish and lobster and, you know.
And then there's Bermuda pumpkin.
Bermuda pumpkin, yeah.
And Bermuda pumpkin soup.
You know, we're big on pumpkin and pumpkin soup. Of course, you know, it's interesting because we've never had one of those 1,400-pound fair-winning pumpkins, you know. You never see that here, you know. It just can't seem to grow that. And the reason for that, of course.
And by the way, the biggest the pumpkin, the bigger the pumpkin, the worse it tastes.
Oh, of course. Yeah. Of course. It's pretty much like any, you know, anything.
But what makes a Bermuda pumpkin so special?
Well, obviously, you know, it was something that was brought here many, many years ago. It's easy to grow, you know. Our soil depth is not any more than 12 inches. So you have a lot of restriction on what we can grow and what we can cultivate. And the climate here, because, you know, we're not hot and we're not cold, pumpkin does very well, just like sweet potatoes do very well and carrots do very well and the onions did very well.
And the onions still do very well.
Well, not as much as they used to.
Really?
You know, we've lost a lot of that part of our business to places like Vidalia, Georgia, and Texas. You know, if you look at how much land we have available, you see that our farms were very small, and they were part of the family. And over the years, you know, the families have all gotten out of the farming business. So, you know, we had this issue where there were bigger places. You know, you go to Texas, and they got, you know, 40 miles of onions. And then we were trying to compete.
All right, so if you're looking for onions, it's okay. You don't have to come to Bermuda. But you're looking for better food, locally sourced, check it out. Barry Cullen, right. The author of, wow, One World, One Culture, and, of course, the host of What's Cooking in Bermuda and the queen of, no, I'm not going to say that. You're wearing the Bermuda shorts today, but I'm not going to hold it against you. All right, we'll be back with more of Peter Greenberg Worldwide from the Fairmont, Southampton, right after this.
Segment of Peter Greenberg Worldwide is proudly brought to you by
Continental Airlines. With over 260 destinations in more than 50 countries, Continental makes it easy to create your own worldwide tour. Continental Airlines. Work hard. Fly right.
Now back to Peter Greenberg.
43 minutes after the hour, Peter Greenberg here with you from the Fairmont, Southampton in Bermuda, taking your calls at 888-887-3837. That's 888-88-PETER. If you can't get through on the phones, you know the drill, everybody. You email me to peter@petergreenberg.com with your name, phone number, question, or problem. We will solve it right here on the air. You know, every time I come to Bermuda and I end up on Front Street, and we talked about this earlier, I'm convinced there's a complete conspiracy of sweater manufacturers because everybody's selling sweaters. I've never seen more sweaters on sale in my life. But then if you walk a little bit further down the street, you discover some other things that have history, but it's not always well described or well presented in terms of what's for sale. And one of those things is perfume. And I mean, there's a lot of history there here in Bermuda, especially when you take a look at family history and how it was developed. And my next guest, Isabel Ramsey Brackstone, isn't it?
Yes.
I got that right. I have to do it the right way because you're a French Canadian.
Yes.
I know.
Oui.
And you're the owner of the Lily Bermuda Perfumery, but it's not that you're just a retailer, you're making it.
We manufacture all our fragrances in St. George's.
And when you think of perfume, you don't necessarily think of Bermuda, do you? I mean, you think of France, you think of labs and testing facilities there and all the big cosmetic companies. How did homemade perfumery happen in Bermuda?
Bermuda is paradise for a perfumer because of all our botanicals. We have beautiful flowers, our trees, the ocean, the sky. The breeze is incredible for us to create with. And what we do is we try to put that in a bottle for people who, when they want go back home, want to relive what they had on our idyllic island.
Okay, but if truth be told, you did not, you were not raised, you were not born, you were not created to be a perfumery person. You were a French-Canadian.
Yes.
In Montreal.
Yes.
In the banking business.
Yes, but perfumery was always a big fashion of a big passion of mine,
But how did you get from there to here?
Well, I married a Bermudian who I met in Montreal, and then we.
But he had nothing to do with perfumery, did he?
No, he didn't have anything to do with perfumery. But when we arrived on the island, the opportunity of the perfumery came along. The perfumery had been around since 1928, and they had no heirs to take over, and the current owner wanted to retire, so we decided to embark on this great adventure.
Knowing nothing about perfume.
However, this is the wonderful thing, is that I had wonderful staff who were ready to teach me everything I needed to know. And David Botello, my master, worked with me for 5 years until last May when he passed. But he taught me everything I needed to know. So now I'm on my own, but there's still other wonderful staff like Pam Wilkinson, who's still with me today, who continue to teach me everything I need to know.
Okay, but okay, assuming I know nothing about this, by the way, which is absolutely correct.
Yes.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So where do you start with in terms of basic ingredients here in Bermuda?
Right. Well, in Bermuda, as I said, there's a lot of notes, which are smells, basically, that inspire us to make perfumes. Now, we work like the French perfumes and the American perfumers, so we don't necessarily make the ingredients. We source them from all around the world, just like French perfumes are not made from French flowers either. So we source our ingredients from all around the world, but our inspiration and the smells we want to translate in our bottles are genuinely Bermudian, and they're made here. So the blend of the oils, the aging, and everything is made in Bermuda. There's one ingredient, the Bermuda cedar, that we make here from scratch, because that's typical. It's still, we work with local carpenters who give us their
really?
Cedar shavings, and yes, and we make special vintages for special carpenters, and it's very unique. I mean, I use cedar in 3 of my men's fragrances, and they're extremely popular.
Wow.
Yes.
You have become a perfumer.
I have, and it's wonderful. I would never go back to banking.
Not a good idea to go back to banking these days.
Exactly, yes.
But when people walk in there, can I actually go in there and watch you make it?
Absolutely. I usually make perfume early in the morning, so if you're around,
you got to get up early to get to catch that. Okay.
Absolutely. But during the day, we're very, very busy giving tours, explaining to our visitors how we make perfumes. So we welcome people to come into the perfumery. We tell them what we do. They can see wherever we left it off, but and then they can ask all the questions they want.
Well, Isabel, I want you to stay with me, because when we come back, I want you to walk me through how I can make my own perfume.
Okay.
Can we do that?
Sure. Absolutely.
All right. Isabel Ramsey Brackstone, the former banker from French Canadian people, living now in Bermuda. Back with more of Peter Greenberg Worldwide right after this.
The Peter Greenberg Worldwide phone lines are open now, so call us at 1-888-88-PETER. That's 1-888-887-3837. This segment of Peter Greenberg Worldwide is proudly brought to you by
Travel Guard Insurance. For travel insurance plans for the unexpected, see your travel agent or visit TravelGuard.com for affordable travel insurance protection from Travel Guard.
Now back to Peter Greenberg.
52 minutes after the hour, Peter Greenberg here with you from the Fairmont Southampton in Bermuda, taking your calls at 888-887-3837. That's 888-88-PETER. If you can't get through on the phones, just email me to peter@petergreenberg.com. We've been talking with Isabel Ramsey Brackstone, mother, former banker, but currently perfumer of Bermuda. Did that work?
Absolutely. And I think I'll never retire doing that. It's the most beautiful job I could ever dream of.
But when you were learning how to do this, obviously you made some mistakes. I mean, obviously you mixed the wrong oil with the wrong scent, and it's like, oh my God, this smells terrible.
Absolutely. Yes, big time. I do describe making perfumes a bit like going into your kitchen and cooking. Okay, so at the beginning, if you don't know your ingredients very well, you mix silly things together.
But, you know, if you talk to a chef, they'll always say, you can never have enough salt, you can never have enough this, but that's not the way you do perfume.
No, absolutely not.
It's not a pinch of this. It's a science, isn't it?
It's a science, but I think overall it's an art, like music or like painting, where you can do crazy things. I mean, you can do anything, but you really have to, you know, technically, it really has to have a nice balance. It has to have a nice beginning, middle, and end, and it has to
sort of like
work
dating.
Well together.
Sort of like dating.
There you go.
It's a relationship.
Absolutely, and you have to connect with your fragrance, and that's, you know, that's what's going to make the fragrance work with you or not.
Now, I'm a big fan of what I call participatory travel. If I want to go to Louisville, Kentucky, I want to make my own baseball bat. If I want to go to Vermont, I want to make my own teddy bear. If I want to go to Maine, I want to build my own boat. How I get it out of there is another story. But can I actually come to your store and make my own perfume?
Well, making perfume is a very complex thing. We first have to write formulas and then make them in little quantities and then evolve from there. I do bespokes. I do customize fragrances, but be warned, it takes a long time. I don't just mix juices together to a nice scent. I really like
this is not Jamba Juice.
I make fine fragrances like French perfumers do. So if you want to come to me and have a bespoke, be ready to invest a lot of your time, and it takes a good 3 to 6 months.
Wow.
Yes.
So you have to move here and marry a banker.
There you go.
See, I'm getting the concept now. Okay. But, for example, there are perfumes that I see sold at stores right now that, you know, they're the $30 range, and then they're the $400 bottles.
Yes.
And I've seen a lot of that. I mean, lately, I've seen some very, very expensive bottles of perfume. What, you know, where are the price ranges going these days? Because there's branding. You know, there's so much branding out there. Everybody wants to have, you know, a Chanel or a Bulgari, or they want to have the an Hermes.
Well, the unfortunate thing about a lot of those designer fragrances is that very few of them actually make perfumes. A lot of the perfumes, designer perfumes you see out there, are licenses that were sold, and unfortunately, those designers have nothing to do with the bottles that are being sold to you at your department.
At much higher prices.
With a very few exceptions, and I will name to that
name.
The Chanel, the Hermes, which are genuinely good quality perfumes. But very few perfume houses actually make perfumes like Chanel does, or like I do in my own perfumery in St. George's. Yes.
Wow.
It's very unfortunate. And as you say, unfortunately, again, a lot of the cost and the price that you pay, well, goes into paying glossy ads in the fashion magazines. You know, it's people who come typically to my perfumery are not attracted by the glossy ads because
most of the time they don't even know you're here. They just walk by.
Yeah, exactly. They find us, and it's word of mouth, which I think is the best publicity you can get. And it's by making good quality product. People find out about you and want to know you, and they come to see us.
What's your most difficult, your most complex perfume?
That's a good question. I think one of my most complex perfume is Summers. I have it here. You want to smell?
Sure. Now, this is radio, so you're just going to take my word for it.
So Summers is a fragrance I did a few years ago, and That's a men's cologne. It's a Bermuda cedar, but then it has some really nice notes. This one is probably one of my most Bermudian because it has notes of black rum. Can you smell the black rum? A bit of
yes, I can smell. Of course I can.
A bit of bay rum and olive wood bark. So it's and a bit of licorice to make it nice and flirty.
Flirty.
Yeah.
Ah.
Of course.
Are you flirting with
it's
me?
An accessory.
Are you flirting with me? You are. Oh my God. I can smell the flirty.
There you go.
Yes, okay.
But perfume is, I think, the ultimate accessory. It's part of your aura, and it's the last dash you put before you go
It's not just the last dash. Sometimes it's the last chance.
I hope not.
I hope not too. Unbelievable. Isabel Ramsey Brackstone, former French Canadian banker.
Yes.
And now perfumer to the folks who know what they want in Bermuda when they show up. I love it. I'm going to come down and check it out.
Wonderful.
I really want to do that. All right. I cannot wait. Bottom line is, though, I want to be flirty, so I'm going to just take the Summers here.
There you go.
All right. Thank you, darling. That music means we're out of time for this hour. For those stations leaving us, have a great rest of your weekend. And for those stations sticking around, we're smelling really good right now at the Fairmont Southampton in Bermuda. Back with more of Peter Greenberg Worldwide right after this.
You've been listening to Peter Greenberg Worldwide. Visit our website at www.petergreenberg.com. Live from around the world, it's time for Peter Greenberg Worldwide with America's number one frontline travel news journalist. Get on the phone now and call 1-888-887-3837. That's 1-888-88-PETER. And now, the man who travels over 400,000 miles each year, the travel detective, Peter Greenberg.
And welcome aboard, Peter Greenberg Worldwide. Hope you're having a wonderful November weekend wherever you happen to be. Of course, we've been living on airplanes, up and down, all around. I think today's about the only day I've not been on a plane in a long time, and I'm beginning to miss peanuts. Does that mean anything? I hope not. Want to know where we are? Get out your maps, boys and girls. 36 degrees, 5 minutes north, 115 degrees, 10 minutes west. We're coming to you from the Palms Place Hotel and Spa in Las Vegas, Nevada, and taking your calls at 888-887-3837. That's 888-88-PETER. If you can't get through on the phones, you know the drill, boys and girls. Email me to peter@petergreenberg.com with your name, phone number, question, or problem. And we'll solve it right here on the air. Vegas, still one of the great icons in America. So many stories to be told here. Even though there's been such an excess in building, so many additional rooms, the place still continues to fill up, and it's still a buyer's market for that simple reason of the law of supply and demand. So other than maybe New Year's Eve, what great deals can you have here? And it's not just the room rate. They're packaging everything now in terms of show tickets. And, of course, our engineer Joe Sand's favorite opportunity for the all-day, all-you-can-eat buffet pass. I think it's about $25. You get seven separate meals. And I think they throw in the stretcher to take you to the hospital. In any case, let's go right to some of the emails. We got one from Barry in Walnut Creek, California. Your website says the best time to purchase the cheapest airline tickets is right after midnight on Tuesday or early Wednesday morning. I heard you speak in Walnut Creek last month and thought you had said the best time was right after midnight on Monday. Can you please clarify? Yes, here it is. You were right the first time. So was I. It's 1 minute after midnight Wednesday morning, so late Tuesday night, 12:01 a.m. Wednesday. And for those people who have not heard me say this before, let me elaborate. Most airline fare sales, they sneak them out over the weekends. And that's the time when you don't want to buy any tickets because that's when everybody's matching and cross-cutting and undercutting and matching again. All that basically stops on Monday. And as you know, once you book an airline ticket, you're given 24 hours in which to purchase it. So all those people who booked those discount tickets by Monday, who did not purchase them by midnight Tuesday, guess what happens? All those airfares suddenly come flooding back into the airline's computer system at 1 minute after midnight Tuesday night or Wednesday morning, and you got about a two-hour window there for you to strike. Now, does that mean you go online? No, it does not. The myth of online is that all the available inventory is online. It's not. It never has been. It never will be. An opportunity here for you to actually let your fingers do the walking and talk to a human being. And those are the people who will have that inventory at their disposal. And the same thing, by the way, applies to hotels. All the stuff you see for hotels online is not a true reflection of the available inventory at individual hotels. You need to call those hotels directly. But you've heard me say that before. I won't elaborate on that. But I hope at least, Barry, you understand now. It's 1 minute after midnight, meaning 12:01 a.m. Wednesday morning for about 2 hours. And one other caveat here. That's 1 minute after midnight in the time zone where the airline is based. So if you're in Walnut Creek, California, and you want to fly on American Airlines, then you'd actually call it 1 minute after 10 p.m. California time because Central Time is 2 hours ahead of you, or 1 minute after 9 p.m. if you were going to book on Delta because they're based in Atlanta, which is Eastern time zone. So now you know the difference there. Here's one from Christy in South Dakota. My husband and I planned a March 2011 trip for our entire family, four generations, how cool is that, to the Moon Palace Resort in Cancun. Each time I hear about another beheading in Mexico, my nightmares increase. Are my fears justified? Is it safe for my family to vacation in Cancun? Assuming you can advise to help solve this dilemma for me would be greatly appreciated, blah, blah, blah. Well, Christy, I got news for you. It's time for everybody listening to this show to get a map. Has there been tremendous violence in Mexico? Yes, in border towns. I'm not suggesting you visit Nuevo Laredo or any of those locations, but Cancun is at least 900 miles south of that. There are no problems there of any significance whatsoever. In fact, we've done this radio show many, many times in the last year and a half from Cancun, from the Riviera Maya, from the Riviera Nayarit, from Punta Mita. I'm a huge fan of Mexico. And it's no different than saying, do you want to do the radio show in Beverly Hills or Compton? Do you want to do the radio show in, you know, east of the Cuyahoga River in Cleveland or Shaker Heights? I mean, there are places you go and there are places you are exercising more caution. That's all I can say. Now, I'm not telling you not to exercise common sense, but I will tell you this, Christy, you'll have a great time there for the reasons that we just even explained in Las Vegas. There's excess capacity. In the service industry, the best time to go anywhere is when nobody else is going. You'll have the best time, the best service, the best experience, the best food, and the best deals. So I hope that's helpful for you. Bottom line is, you still want to exercise common sense. There are certain places in any city you probably don't want to go out at night unescorted, but other than that, you will have a great time. I promise you that. The hotels there are not full, and they need to fill those rooms, and they will do that to your benefit. Here's one from Doris in Minneapolis. I called Delta for a quote on a round-trip ticket to Chicago. As I do not have a computer to process the ticket, I had to go to my daughter's the next day, and of course, in one day, the same flight went from $209 to $313. What do I do? The next time you want to book a ticket, keep in mind, I said this before, I'll say it again, the airlines are updating their fares over 250,000 times a day. These fares are very fluid. They change by the hour. Sometimes they'll even change by the minute. So if you find a fare that you like and you don't have a PC, Doris, then call your daughter or anybody else who does and tell them to book it right away, because those will not last very long. Now, there's also the opportunity, more often than not, it doesn't happen these days, but it does occasionally happen where the fares actually go down. And there's Fare Compare, that's on a website, which you don't have because you don't have a PC, but your daughter might have it. There's Yapta, Y-A-P-T-A. Both of these offer really good search engines for alerting you when a fare in a particular market goes below a certain amount, which might entice you to buy the ticket earlier or more immediately than you otherwise would. So that's what I would do. There really is no recourse once the fare goes up, because all the airline is doing is saying, okay, we filled so many seats at this fare category, we only have another 20 to fill. We've already made our profit on the plane, so why not charge more? Because whoever's going to show up now is going to need to fly, and we might as well hose them. I mean, look, I was going the other day from Washington, D.C. to LaGuardia. 10 days earlier, the fare was $119. 3 days later, it was $194. And a day after that, it was $309 because they could. And by the way, with all due respect to the airlines, if you were running the airline, you'd do exactly the same thing. It's how you price your product to make the most amount of money based on the ebb and flow of the tidal chain known as supply and demand. So when you see a price that you like, you grab it. One other caveat, if the fare does go down, it better go down more than $150, because the ticket change fees these days are, guess what, $150. So if it doesn't go more than $150 down, it's a wash. You can't really get a refund. If it goes down more than $150, especially on higher-priced international tickets, you're in luck. So there you have that. I hope that's been helpful to you. When we come back, we're going to be joined by, I'm going to tell you this. We're going to be joined by Independent Traveler Times about traveling with kids. Isn't that fun? Yeah. How to avoid kids when you travel. There's a topic. Back with more of Peter Greenberg Worldwide from the Palms in Las Vegas right after this.
The Peter Greenberg Worldwide phone lines are open now, so call us at 1-888-887-3837. That's 1-888-88-PETER. This segment of Peter Greenberg Worldwide is proudly brought to you by
Continental Airlines. With over 260 destinations in more than 50 countries, Continental makes it easy to create your own worldwide tour. Continental Airlines. Work hard. Fly right.
Now back to Peter Greenberg.
18 minutes after the hour, Peter Greenberg here coming to you from the Fairmont Southampton in Bermuda with your calls at 888-887-3837. That's 888-88-PETER. If you can't get through on the phones, you know the drill, boys and girls. Email me to peter@petergreenberg.com with your name, your phone number, your question, or your problem. We'll solve it right here on the air. And as we do every week at this time, I encourage you to go to our website with the imaginative name of petergreenberg.com for one important and essential reason: our comprehensive list of aid and relief organizations doing all the hard work in Haiti, in Western China, in Chile, and, of course, in the Gulf. As it particularly applies to Haiti, I cannot encourage you more to get involved, because it's a rebuilding effort that's going to take at least a generation. We're talking 8-9 years from now. And even though it may not be on the front pages of your newspaper or topping the evening news, it's certainly on our front pages. There are so many things you can do other than just donating money. When you look at that list, you might surprise yourself as to how well you can relate to so many of the organizations that are working down there, and you can get physically, actively, directly involved and go down there. It's the best vacation you can give yourself, because you're giving away so much to other people, and the stuff you get back is exponential in terms of goodness. So please check our website out, petergreenberg.com, for that website list of all the organizations doing that great work in all those affected areas. Right before the break, we were talking about going under the water. We talked about 650 different species of fish here in Bermuda, that it's not just one island, that it's over 180. I mean, in the archipelago, it's just phenomenal, and how close it really is to America, which makes it so accessible to everybody listening to the show. And for those people who might be intimidated about going under the water, the good news is the water's not that deep here. You can really see so much in a short amount of time. And joining me now is somebody who's a Bermudian who has been diving just about all his life, and that's Graham Maddox. Hey, Graham.
Hi, how you doing?
I'm doing fine. So did I say anything that was wrong there?
No, you hit the nail on the head. Most of the recreational diving here in Bermuda is in maximum depth of 60 feet. But we've got the third deepest oceans in the world just off Bermuda here as well.
Plus, you've got some great wreck diving.
Phenomenal wreck diving, yeah.
Which means people couldn't find Bermuda until Bermuda found them.
Yeah, well, that's why we have so many wrecks. People go, oh, why are there so many wrecks here? We've got 280 miles of square miles of coral reef here, surrounded by a wall of barrier reef. And, you know, back in the 1600s, 1700s, they didn't have radar, GPS, and...
Hey, by the way, even if you do have radar and GPS, if you don't know the waters, you're going to run aground.
Oh, yeah. It just happened just a couple of summers ago. Sailboat coming in, radar, GPS, still managed to run into the reef.
And what happened to him?
They lost a boat. Yeah, sank. We did the recovery on it.
So you actually got the boat up?
Yep. Yep.
And what happened to that boat?
It was a write-off. You don't run into the reef here in Bermuda without a lot of damage.
Exactly. So what would you say is like the coolest wreck that you can dive here?
Wow. Man, it really depends. I mean... Bermuda is so unique because there's nowhere else in the world.
But you are the wreck diving capital of the Atlantic. There's no doubt about it.
And one of the reasons why is there's nowhere else in the world where you have wrecks from the 1500s all the way up to the 1940s. So my most favorite wreck is on the eastern side of the island. The Aristo has some fire engines on top. It's just
absolutely... It has fire engines on
top? Fire engines, yeah. Fire engines. It's got a steamroller. It's got a beautiful A-frame steam engine, which is quite rare. It sits in about 50 feet of water, but it's untouched, Peter. You're talking about coral that is absolutely unmolested, untouched. It's absolutely pristine.
Well, let's talk about that, because I don't hear a lot of that very much, about coral that's not molested and that's untouched, because we're seeing the disintegration and the diminution, if you will, of so many great coral reefs around the world.
Yeah, it's really sad. I've dove all over the Atlantic, and... you know, people always say, well, where's your favorite spot? And it's got to be Bermuda. I mean, our coral, we have 98% reef coverage. And it's a lot of tourists that come out on the boat, they go, yeah, we never heard Bermuda even had diving. It's the best-kept secret in the Atlantic. The coral out here is stunning.
Well, the reason why it's the best-kept secret in the Atlantic is people don't know it's in the Atlantic.
Yeah. Yeah, that's very true.
Now, I've got to ask the Johnny Depp question. What about buried treasure and pirates?
It's out there, for sure. Yeah, it's not all been found yet. Yeah. Some of the largest... treasures ever to be found are probably still to be found here in Bermuda.
Because we all know the stories of Mel Fisher in the Caribbean.
That's
of
right,
course,
yeah.
But nobody has really gotten a lot of treasure here lately, have they?
No, they haven't, yeah. And there are certain laws that stop people from looking or to handing it in if they do find it. The problem
okay,
is
wait, Graham, look at me straight in the face. If you found it, would you hand it in?
No, probably not.
Thank you very much. Okay, fine.
Yeah, and, you know, there's some great stories that go with it. I mean, they used Bermuda back in the 1600s and 1700s as a landmark. Once they came up the Gulf Stream, they would use Bermuda. When they found Bermuda, they'd turn right and head back to Spain. And a lot of times they would zig instead of zag and end up on our reefs here. The maps weren't very accurate back then. There were a lot of – when you
people were doing star fixes. They were just celestial.
And they didn't even know latitude. Yeah. You know, they longitude, sorry. So they were – a lot of times they were guessing. I mean, they were amazingly accurate for what rudimentary navigational skills they had. But they often made mistakes, and they ended up wrecked here.
Wow.
Yeah.
All right, so you've got your favorite wrecks. What's the most surprising wreck? I mean, other than the fire engines on top of the deck.
Surprising wreck. Well, you know, you have a wreck called the Cristobal Colon, which is the largest shipwreck in Bermuda. It was a luxury cruise liner. It had no passengers when it wrecked, but it had 113 crew. And it smashed in the reef doing 15 knots.
Ooh, bye-bye.
Yeah. To make a long story longer, once they did the investigation, they found out that the crew really weren't crew, but might have been people running away from a revolution down in Puerto Rico that ended up them being put in prison, and some of them were executed when they got back to Spain.
Wow.
Which is kind of a neat story.
So that wasn't exactly the love boat.
No, it wasn't the love boat. No, it was all kind of, had a really neat story behind it.
Now, of all the wrecks, what about naval ships, though, as opposed to just passenger ships or freighters?
Yeah, you know, back during the 1900s, during the Second World War, the Americans hadn't joined the...
You know what? You're scaring me to say back in the 1900s. Oh, my God, I'm feeling really
yeah,
old now,
exactly,
man.
Yeah. Well, during the Second World War, we did have a few ships that ran into the reef. They were carrying iron ore. Most of the big shipwrecks are on the eastern side of the island.
What about ships that were torpedoed during the war?
Yeah.
Not too many here.
All in deep water and well off Bermuda.
Any submarines?
Yes, there is one off the western end, but it's in silly deep water, over 2,000 feet.
So nobody's going down
there. That's the problem. It's either quite shallow here in Bermuda or real, real deep. You know, we're beginning to sort of, my dive team is beginning to explore the deeper water around the island and trying to find some of those wrecks. We're hunting for one right now that we know exists. We're not too far away from finding it now.
But on those, you have to use the deep sea submersibles, right?
No, we use our Optima rebreathers from DiveRite. Yeah, we dive rebreathers and on helium, and we're going to go all the way around the island on these very large underwater military sleds to survey all the water around the island at 200 feet.
Wow.
And see what's down there. Yeah. And the other thing we're trying to do is also discover hot spots and breeding areas for lionfish.
Yeah, let's talk about that because off air, right before you came on the air, you're saying to me that, you know, things have gotten better in that department.
Yeah. Well, we used to, back in the old days, we had these big wire cages called fish pots, and the fish could swim in and couldn't swim out. And as the population of Bermuda grew and the demand for fish grew, they began to wipe out our fish stocks here. Thank God a lady called Anne Wright DeCudo made them illegal and saved our fish population. Since then, our fish population has become roaring back. Peter, you got to remember, we're the second most remote populated island in the world. So some of the fish species that we have here are completely genetically unique to Bermuda, such as our black grouper. Our black grouper genetic code doesn't exist in any other black grouper code DNA anywhere else in the world. And we've been studying those for 4 years. We have the largest black grouper aggregation sites in the world. Now we have a problem. We have the lionfish that's been introduced to the Atlantic artificially.
And they're a predator.
They're a predator. And some people get confused and they tell me on the boat, they go, yeah, but why don't you just leave them alone? They're so beautiful. Here's the problem. They're not meant to be here in the Atlantic. And what we did as an experiment, we took our Bermuda bream, which is another endemic fish to Bermuda, and we put them in a tank with a black grouper.
And they ate them all.
No, they swam right to the other side of the tank. They knew to stay away from that black grouper. We put them in the tank with the lionfish. They swam right to the lionfish and were eaten. They don't know. It's not in their DNA. It's not in their gene to know to stay away from the lionfish because they're not used to it. And that's the problem.
Okay, stupid question about the lionfish. You're not catching them to eat them, are you?
Oh, yes.
You are?
Yeah, they're really tasty. We're
especially when they got the black grouper in them.
Yeah, and, you know, the unique thing is that they're sushi grade, too. And so we're hoping they're going to catch on as a sushi-grade meat.
Really?
Yeah. Well, as they kill off all the blue tuna, we hope that people will start. In the Bahamas, they're everywhere. They're wiping out the fish life in the Bahamas.
So you got to get some fish pots back just for the lionfish.
Yeah, and that's what we're hoping to do.
Really?
We'll all be very controlled by the environmental protection people and us, and we'll set them in these particular hot spots that we find at deep depths, catch a large amount of them, and hopefully start selling them commercially.
So, wow.
Yeah, as another food source.
I hope you do that.
Yeah, we will.
You can't lose those other species.
No, they are ferocious eaters.
Yeah.
Yeah, they eat constantly, and they'll actually eat themselves to death, the lionfish.
Really?
Yeah, they grow much bigger here in the Atlantic.
I have friends of mine like that, too.
Yeah, I've got a few like that myself.
I know.
Yeah, yeah, no, they'll just eat and eat and eat. When we dissect them, their livers are disproportionately big. They're huge, and the Atlantic record is 18 inches for a lionfish.
Wow. Amazing. Graham Maddox, the owner of Triangle Diver, a Bermudian, and someone who will take you around and show you the stuff that's not in the brochures. When we come back, more from the Fairmont Southampton in Bermuda. Peter Greenberg here back right after this.
To participate in the program and speak with Peter Greenberg, call 1-888-887-3837. or visit petergreenberg.com. The Peter Greenberg Worldwide phone lines are open now. So call us at 1-888-887-3837. That's 1-888-88-PETER. Once again, here's your host, Peter Greenberg.
33 minutes after the hour, Peter Greenberg here with you from the Palms Place in Las Vegas. Taking your calls at 887-3837. That's, of course, 888-887-3837 or 888-88-PETER. And if you can't get through on the phones, you know the drill, boys and girls. You email me at peter at petergreenberg.com with your name, phone number, question, or problem so we can solve it right here on the air. As I talked about earlier, let's face the old W.C. Fields quote. There are two types of children traveling. Two types of children. I love this. I've given away the joke. Two types of travel, flying first class and then traveling with children. And joining us now from the independenttraveler.com, Sarah Schlichter. Do you agree with that, Sarah?
Yeah, sometimes it feels that way. How are you doing, Peter?
Good. I mean, children are a sort of an unavoidable nuisance sometimes, and sometimes they're an unavoidable pleasure. It's not always the bad screaming kid, but there seems to be sort of an inverse rule of travel. That is, you know, the louder the screaming kid, the closer he's sitting to you.
Yeah, and that's the reason some people are always kind of crying out for family sections on airplanes. I don't know that that'll ever happen. I feel like no matter where on the plane that kid is, you're going to hear it. But
well, actually, I have a great place for the kid on the plane. It's the bulkhead seat.
Not because of extra space. The cargo hold?
No, the bulkhead seat, because if he wants to kick somebody, he's kicking a wall and not you.
There you go. That's a good plan.
I mean, seriously. I mean, that's where you want to put him. But there are other rules of thumb here that you suggest, right?
Yeah. I mean, if you're trying to avoid kids while traveling, I mean, you may not be able to do anything about the plane trip. But plan your trip for when school is in session. So if you can avoid summer, you know, Christmas holidays, Easter and spring break, those times of year, you'll do a lot better. Fall is often a great time to go because you still have kind of warm temperatures lingering in early fall, but you can still, all the kids are back in school and you won't see barely any family.
Right. Well, for me, there's one week more than any other week of the year if you want to travel anywhere. In fact, it's even more interesting when you say if you really want to travel with your kids, it's the best week to go because there won't be any other kids either. And you know what that is?
What's that?
The week after Thanksgiving. It's the dead week.
Oh, yeah.
Nobody's traveling that week. So if you want to go to Disney World with your kids, that's when you take them. Or if you want to guarantee that you'll be on a plane with that many kids, that's the week to go. You'll own it.
Yeah, that's a great time to go. I think a lot of people are trying to, you know, plan Christmas things or whatever, and they don't feel like traveling. That's a great time.
And also, for any parents listening to the show, if you really want to do yourself a favor, and quite frankly, your kids a favor, and then, of course, by inference, me too, learn the concept of extra credit assignments from your teachers, and don't take the kids out of school when everybody else is out of school. Take the kids out of school when everybody is in school. Take another week off and get an extra credit assignment to go to Europe or go to the Caribbean or go to Hawaii or even go visit your relatives and have the kids do an extra credit assignment, and therefore you're not going to be screaming around with other kids.
Yeah, that's a great idea. And, I mean, of course, travel is very educational. So if you can work it out with the child's school, that's a great idea.
And remember my philosophy, which I completely stole from Mark Twain, never let school interfere with your education.
Absolutely, yeah.
All right, but you also have an idea about not just when to go, but where to go.
Yeah, I mean, families tend to flock to beaches, to national parks, certain types of attractions. And so that doesn't mean that you can't go to those places at all. But if you know, again, try to go in the off season or try to find beaches that are a little bit more isolated, harder to get to, don't have maybe restaurants and snack bars and the kind of, you know, amenities that make life easier for families, you'll tend to have a quieter experience. And with national parks, I just went to Acadia National Park in early October. And other than the weekends where we did see some families, it was just very quiet and a much, you know, older crowd during the week. So fall is, again, a great time to go to a national park.
Okay, I've got one for you.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you talk about a quieter experience or a less frenetic experience. Listen, I owe my parents a big thank you because I started traveling as a child because they encouraged me to travel. So maybe I was one of those whining kids. But I'll tell you what they didn't do. And it all gets down to not where you went or when you went, it all gets down to something else, and that is what you eat. If you're going to feed your kids food that is high in sugar, you know, they're going to go nuts. I mean, they're going to be running around hyper all the time.
Yeah, it can be kind of hard to eat well on the road because, you know, restaurant meals tend to be kind of heavy and unhealthy. But yeah, if you can take your kids to some of the more, you know, a healthier option and make sure maybe stop by a supermarket along the way and grab some fruit and nuts and healthier snacks, that'll certainly help keep them a little bit more sedate.
Well, not only that, I mean, everything that's like high sugar content, they go absolutely nuts. And I see it happen all the time.
Yeah.
You know, what do you see the parent feeding the kid right before they get on the airplane? Ice cream.
And I think they use it as a bribe, you know, like, okay, we'll give you some ice cream if you just stay quiet on the plane. But that's kind of counterintuitive. It really.
No.
Yeah.
Now, by the same token, I know some parents, I'm not encouraging this, but that they'll order milk for the child and put a little Kahlua in it.
Okay.
You know, they basically want to do it. It's like kitty downers, you know.
Oh, my gosh.
I know they want these kids to do a nap. But here's the thing. If you're going to be at an airport waiting for a plane, get all the energy out there. Run around the terminal. Play a game of tag between gates. Do anything you can to get that kid's energy down so when they get on the plane, they do what I do, slip into a coma.
Yeah, that's a great idea. I mean, airports are huge. You can waste lots and lots of time walking around the different gates and terminals. So, and there's plenty to see and plenty to do. So that's a great idea.
You got it. Well, you can read more about this, of course, in independenttraveler.com. Our guest, Sarah Schlichter. Hey, Sarah, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you.
When we come back, more from Las Vegas at the Palms Place Hotel and Spa when we come back right after this.
Now to talk to Peter Greenberg at 1-888-887-3837 or email him at peter@petergreenberg.com. This segment of Peter Greenberg Worldwide is proudly brought to you by
Continental Airlines. With over 260 destinations in more than 50 countries, Continental makes it easy to create your own worldwide tour. Continental Airlines. Work hard. Fly right.
Now back to Peter Greenberg.
43 minutes after the hour, Peter Greenberg here with you from the Fairmont Southampton in Bermuda, taking your calls at 888-887-3837. That's 888-88 Peter, and if you can't get through on the phones, you know the drill. Email me to peter@petergreenberg.com with your name, your phone number, your question, or your problem. We'll solve it right here on the air. If you're like me and you love the water, you'll also love the fact that you can check out some really cool things along the coast here, including the Gibbs Hill Lighthouse. It's been warning ships since 1846, not always effectively, since you've been hearing our previous guests talk about how many people just end up getting shipwrecked here, but it does sit 360 feet above the water. And it's the second cast iron lighthouse ever constructed. And then the climb to the top, but who's counting? 185 steps. Let's go right to some of the emails here. We got one from Pam in Santa Rosa, California. I would appreciate your expert opinion on the subject of travel insurance. Specifically, we have booked a 10-day trip to Costa Rica for early December. We'll be staying in Eco Lodges, and we'll have a driver guide to get to from one location to another. We have our own health, homeowners, and auto insurance. Do we need more? Yes, you do. Your own health insurance will probably not cover you specifically in Costa Rica. And the fact you have homeowners insurance is lovely in case somebody breaks into your house when you're in Costa Rica. But we're talking about how do you protect yourself when you're there. There are two kinds of insurance we'll talk about, Pam. One is called trip cancellation and interruption insurance. And that's basically if your own travel provider decides to cease operations or doesn't show up or you can't show up for any reason. You need to look at that carefully to figure out what your own physical conditions are before you leave. If you have a pre-existing health condition, you're worried about a family member who might be sick and you might have to leave during the trip, or you're worried about weather, if there's going to be any kind of hurricane or other natural disaster that might be out there. And that really gets down to how much is your actual financial investment in the trip to begin with. You know, if you're on a $59 ticket on Southwest Airlines to Chicago, you may not want to invest in insurance. If you're on a $6,000 trip, you might want to invest in insurance. But make sure you get the right kind of trip cancellation and interruption insurance. And for me, it's not kind of – you'd never want to buy it from the travel provider themselves, because if they go out of business, so does the insurance. You can buy it from a third party through any travel agency, and then you find out what the different premium problems are, meaning – there are some premiums that range between 9 and 11% of the cost of the trip. And that's really if it covers you if the travel provider goes out of business or if there's a natural disaster or a political insurrection of any kind. But what happens if you want to just not go for any reason at all? Well, there are a number of companies that sell that kind of trip cancellation and interruption policy, and that insurance premium is anywhere from 13 to 16% of the cost of the trip because it allows you to cancel for any reason whatsoever. So you be the best judge of that. Read the fine print, but you do need that kind of insurance if it's an expensive trip to Costa Rica. Here's one from Giselle in Evanston, Wyoming. Where is the best place to change dollars into euros? I'm going to France. Do we do it before we leave the U.S. or wait till we get to Paris? You wait. You're never going to get a beneficial exchange rate changing money in the U.S. ever. Not only that, you're never going to get a beneficial exchange rate if you do it through one of the money changers at the airport or one of those money change places on the streets. If you have an ATM card, that's the way to go. You get the day of exchange rate that the bank is charging their own customers, and you only get what you need. You don't have to get more than what you need because, remember, the money change people make money from you when you change money to euros coming in, and they make money from you when you change it back to dollars going out. Now, that doesn't mean you're not going to get charged a transaction fee by your ATM folks, so make sure that you have a bank that doesn't charge you either a foreign transaction fee or an exchange fee, and there are a number of cards that don't do that. If you have a money market account, let's say with Charles Schwab, they don't charge for it. Capital One doesn't charge for it. So double check it, because sometimes that can be anywhere from $3 to $5 every time you hit the bank, plus an exchange fee. Okay? Still, it's a better deal than going through the money changers, because every time you go through the money changers, they hose you going in and they hose you going out. And the good news about using the ATM card, as I said before, you're only taking out what you need for that amount of time. You don't have to take out huge sums of money. Here's one from Sheila in Sioux Falls, North Dakota. Would you happen to know where cruise lines purchase their seafood and veggies? I'm taking a cruise on Carnival Liberty, also in the event a recall occurs while cruising. You know, I have yet to hear of a major shrimp recall at sea. And interestingly enough, a lot of the fresh produce and a lot of the fresh seafood that ships take with them, believe it or not, they buy, in many cases, in the ports in which they show up. For obvious reasons, you don't want to flash freeze a lot of food. It just doesn't taste that good. So the answer is, every cruise line will tell you who their purveyors are. It's a matter of public record. You just ask them. So check with Carnival, and they'll tell you. But that's no reassurance for you. Anything other than the fact that they do pay attention if there are recalls, and I guarantee you that'll be a teletype alert to that ship anytime there's a problem. I hope that's helpful to you. There you have it on that one. When we come back, a little bit of talking about golf in Bermuda. And by the way, Bermuda is all about golf, if you haven't noticed lately. And if you don't play golf, then boo-hoo. But you know me, I just drive a mean cart. Back with more of Peter Greenberg Worldwide right after this.
The Peter Greenberg Worldwide phone lines are open now, so call us at 1-888-88-PETER. That's 1-888-887-3837. This segment of Peter Greenberg Worldwide is proudly brought to you by
MedJet Assist. If you're injured or hospitalized while traveling, MedJet Assist will arrange medical transportation directly to the hospital of your choice. Travel safely and be smart. Get MedJet Assist. Take trips, not chances.
Now back to Peter Greenberg.
52 minutes after the hour, Peter Greenberg coming to you from the Fairmont, Southampton in Bermuda. Taking your calls at 888-887-3837. That's 888-88-PETER. If you can't get through on the phones, you know the drill, boys and girls. Email me to peter@petergreenberg.com with your name, your phone number, your question, or your problem. We'll solve it right here on the air. I have an admission to make. Every time I land in Bermuda, one of the very first questions people always ask me is, oh, are you here for the golf? And I usually say, honestly, no. Oh, do you play it? No, I like to watch it. You know what? If you like golf or if you like watching golf, this is the place to be. 7 18-hole golf courses. And the person who knows more about that than just about anyone, the director of golf at Bermuda's Port Royal Golf Course, Andrew Brooks. Hey, Andrew.
Hey, thanks for having me on, Peter. It's good to be here.
You got it. Now, that's a lot of golf courses.
That is, yeah. We have more golf courses in Bermuda per square mile than anywhere else in the world. I mean, it's our claim to fame. And, yeah, we've got a great product here. It's golf for everybody, which is something we lay claim to.
And who designed the courses?
Port Royal is designed by Robert Trent Jones Sr., and we've just come through a massive renovation. We've just had opened last year, 2008. We had Roger Rawlich come in. And there's a lovely story connected with Roger coming in to redesign design Port Royal. He was on the original design team with Robert Trent Jones back in the late 60s when they built the golf course. So
now your golf course is one of the longest. It is the longest.
It's 6,842 yards long.
But who's counting?
Well, you know what? Me when I go out there playing, especially the way I'm playing at the moment. It really is. It's a spectacular piece of property. It's ocean on the ocean, and we were talking
But if you're on the ocean, that presents interesting problems too in terms of wind. I mean, you're not just playing the green; you're playing the wind.
Oh, absolutely. There's every element that you're ever going to come across on the course, and the scenically, it's stunning, absolutely beautiful.
What's the toughest hole in your course?
Toughest hole, the most spoken about hole is 16, and it is the toughest. It's one of the most picturesque holes in the world of golf. It's a par 3. It's 235 yards long off the back tees. And it's right across the ocean. And
it's crosswinds.
It is. And I always throw it open. Anybody that can say there's a better hole and send me a pitch, send me to where this better hole is, I will give them a free 3-day stay in Bermuda.
Really?
Absolutely.
Well, there's this golf course in Iraq.
Yeah.
It's got a few minefields to get through.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm sure.
But for people who are not professional golf players. I mean, you can do a lot of professional golf watching. You just had the PGA Grand Slam here.
Absolutely, yeah. We just had the PGA Grand Slam, and that was a real spectacle. And the great thing is the spirit, the golf community spirit that's here, people out there supporting the players. And we had Martin Kaymer playing. We had Graham McDowell, Ernie Els, and we had David Toms coming as well. So we had a real strong field, and it was just a great success. It was a tremendous event.
Well, when you've got 7 18-hole courses here, I'm going to assume, tell me if I'm wrong, it's also a good place to learn golf.
It is, and then there are places to come and learn golf, and we do packages. We do packages where you come along, you can stay on site, you can learn to play golf, and effectively come here to Bermuda, learn to play in a beautiful atmosphere, lovely place to be, and go away a better golfer or a golfer.
Okay, now, how long have you been in Bermuda?
I've been here for 2 years.
All right, so you're the new guy on the block.
I am the new kid on the block, as they say.
And what brought you here?
Well, if you look out that window there, you may be able to see. Now, what brought me here was the job that was that had come up as director of golf at Port Royal. It was an opportunity that I wouldn't want to pass up. It's been a great experience, and running two Grand Slams, and being at the start of the course or the renovation of the course has just been a tremendous opportunity, and it is a great place to live. And one of the great things that I love about Bermuda is anywhere else you go in the world, you've got this competitive market, and here what we do, all the golf courses, Tucker's Point, Riddles Bay, Belmont, Fairmont, Southampton, we work together as a unit. We are a golf product.
So, for example, if I was playing at Port Royal, you wouldn't mind sending me somewhere else if I wanted to play a different way?
Absolutely not. I'd like to hear from you that you've just played at Belmont or Tucker's or Mid-Ocean and get some great feedback from you, because that's what we're all about. We're not about coming here and saying...
All right, so you're talking about hole 16 at your course.
Yeah.
What are the toughest ones on the other course?
Toughest hole on, certainly on Riddler's Bay, would be the sixth hole. Great. Again, ocean-fronted hole, and you drive across the side of the ocean, and it's just a beautiful hole, a real, real good hole. There's some great holes on the island. Every golf course you play here, you just get that visual experience as well as that golfing experience. You really couldn't find anywhere better in the world to go and get those same experiences.
So is the Ryder Cup coming?
The Ryder Cup won't be coming.
Why not?
But I think infrastructure is probably one of the main reasons we won't be holding the Ryder Cup.
Has Tiger been here?
He hasn't.
Right.
No. We get the good players come in. We had Jack Nicklaus has played Port Royal. Obviously, the four players that have played in the Grand Slam each year. And it's always interesting to get the feedback from these, from the golfing greats.
Yeah.
And the feedback is so positive. They love it.
Although Jack Nicklaus these days doesn't play. He just designs courses now.
He does now. Yeah, he designs. He does. Yeah, absolutely.
Unbelievable. Andrew Brooks, the director of golf at Bermuda's Port Royal Golf Course. Thank you, man.
Thank you.
You're the new guy on the block. Unbelievable, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah. All right. Yeah. Hey, listen, that music means we are out of time for this hour and for the show. Lots of people to thank. Of course, Tony Best handling the engineering work here in Bermuda for us. Christina McIntyre producing the show as the field producer. Shelley Goncharowski, our chief producer in Seattle. Suzanne Wentz here from the Fairmont, who came in all the way from Boston. Michelle Horn, and of course, all the folks here at the Fairmont Southampton in Bermuda. Thanks very much, guys. We'll see you next week from another distant remote location somewhere in the world. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to Peter Greenberg Worldwide. Visit our website at www.petergreenberg.com.